Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Once again, for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation. Whether you are coming in through Blog Talk Radio or listening through the Bard's Logic Political Talk website or some of the other venues used to listen to the show, or whether you are in chat or listening to this on the archived show. Tonight, we're going to have some great folks come in here, and that includes Kelly Mordecai, who is also the author of The Hidden Fourth Branch. It's a great book. Check it out. You can find it on Amazon and also on his website, which, of course, he'll be speaking a little bit tonight. But mostly we're going to be talking about what we have to, about the amendment to the NDAA. Who voted for it and against it and why, and how will this affect American citizens? We will also discuss jury notification and some of its history and its dangers. And first we have tonight is the gentleman I mentioned earlier, and that is Kelly. Kelly, your mic is live. Thank you very much for coming in.
Hey, Robert. I'm always glad to join your show.
It's always good to have you.
Yeah, I don't know. I went in a tailspin today when I found out what happened. I mean, yes, it's incredibly good news. This amendment that protects the right to trial by jury, the amendment to the NDAA, it was passed last night about 10 p.m. It was 67-29, which means they have two-thirds vote in the Senate, so Obama can't, you know, he can't say no on that one, and it doesn't matter what the president says when you got two-thirds vote. But the other problem is just that the Republicans, I almost said repugnant ones, but a lot of Republicans oppose this, and we need to talk about this because the importance of trial by jury is so fundamental to our liberties. And it's, when I first heard about it, I was majorly surprised, and I got way into it. But I've invited Roger Roots, who's an attorney, and also Ted Dunlap, who is with FIJA, the Fully Informed Jury Association. I'm hoping they're able to join us tonight, and we're going to have an interesting conversation.
Yeah, definitely, for certain. So what have you heard so far about it? I've unfortunately had to go on an extended hiatus. Things that I've been working on here on my end. So I haven't been in touch with this vote with the NDAA. So, well, what have you heard from it? I see here in my description here, I'm missing a few numbers that I'll have to revamp later.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
I'm here. Are you?
Well, I'm having a lot of disconnect problems. Are you there?
I'm here.
I'm going to call back in about a minute. I've got a bad cell, something. I'll be right back.
Okay, and to make sure, and Lugnut, I see you in the chat. If you'd like to say a bit, if you can hear me, I'll do a mic check here. If you could just type something in the chat, and I will too. I'll ask you, you know, make sure it's nothing on my end. Okay, how is that? Perhaps something wasn't plugged in all the way. Okay, I'm wondering if we're having some technical difficulties here. Yes, can you hear the mic?
I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Did Chris and Rex join us?
I can hear you. No, I've not seen them yet. I was just checking the mic, putting a chat for folks to say yay or nay, whether they can hear me. So I guess you can hear me fine. So perhaps something wasn't connected, but it seemed everything. My headset that I normally use, the microphone portion, conked out today while I was using it, but it sounds like it's back in action.
Hmm. Okay, yeah. I'm hearing you great now. That's
Oh, great. Yeah, something must have not been connected in. But anyway, enough of the digression. It sounds like we can hear each other all fine now. So go ahead. What we were saying is that, you know, we've seen a list of the yays and the nays, and it seemed like the nays against this amendment were mainly by Republicans.
This is horrifying. More Republicans voted against this than for it. There was 25 Republicans who voted against this amendment of the right of trial by jury. We had 20 Republicans voting for it. We had 47 Democrats. This is written by Dianne Feinstein, by the way. This is a strange world where I'm going to say this. God bless the Democrats for getting trial by jury right, okay? Okay. I don't like the Democrats, but you know what? They got it right. They got it right. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is great. All right, so 47 Democrats were for this amendment. Only 3 were against it. Again, I'm going to say this. This is a shock. Only 20 Republicans were for it. Rand Paul, yes, Rand Paul was for this amendment. 25 Republicans against it. And this amendment, okay, Robert, we talked earlier, I was hesitant to do the show because I wanted to call Chuck Grassley. I was like, what are you thinking?
Right.
I mean,
right.
I was going to pull Ricky Ricardo on Chuck Grassley, you know, Ricky Ricardo. Lucy, you got some splitting to do. All right, so here is the amendment. I got in my little hand here. And, this is Amendment 3018 to the NDAA. This is great news. Okay, this is awesome news. It passed, okay? This passed. All right, so Section 1032, prohibition to the indefinite detention of citizens and lawful permanent residents. That's a good idea to prohibit indefinite detention. By the way, you know what that says? This is a big picture. Do you know what this says? They went to the NDAA and they passed it.
Right.
Then they admitted through this amendment that it was wrong.
Right, right. Well, you know, what I'm trying to wrap my head around, and perhaps, you know, other, you know, callers can come in here and tell us. I've been doing some research here, some reading, and some are contending that the reason why many of the Republicans did not vote for it is because there were gaps in it. But I figured, you know, better something than nothing and then work from there. What do you think? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I thought about calling Chuck Grassley and asking, hey, look, buddy, why? Why did you vote against this? Well, I don't have to do that now because I've read the actual text. Got it in my hot little hand here.
The actual text, okay?
Prohibition of indefinite detention of citizens and lawful permanent residents. You know, this will basically be added to the NDAA. All right. Addition. An authorization to use military force, a declaration of war, or any similar authority shall not authorize the detention without charge or trial of a citizen or lawful permanent resident of the United States apprehended in the United States unless an act of Congress expressly authorizes such detention. The next part says, paragraph 1 applies to an authorization to use military force, a declaration of war, or any similar authority enacted before, on, or after the date of the enactment of the NDAA. This shall not be construed to authorize the detention of the citizen of the United States. Okay? There's more to it than that, but they said it several ways. Look, you're not going to throw people in jail without trial by jury or a charge. Where does a charge come from? A judge. So under the NDAA, the only way a citizen can be pulled out of their house is by a judicial order or by a trial by jury situation. Of course, they can be arrested, but to be permanently incarcerated or indefinitely detained, you have the right still a trial by jury, where 12 of your neighbors say, you know what, not guilty, we're not going to put him in jail for this. So that is just absolutely phenomenal news that this got passed. And the importance of this, and why I was so bothered by the Republicans voting against it, why this is so important is because of the simple principle of trial by jury. So, I have to kind of hold myself back because I've been so frustrated all day, but I can start going on a rant here. This is not about the grand jury. This is about the petit jury. The petit jury is
right.
The what you see on Law and Order, you know, and 12 people sitting there in the stands and they're watching the whole thing.
Hey, Kelly. I'm doing a mic check. Is my mic good?
Yeah, just a little connection.
Okay. Yeah, I had to get some new equipment.
Oh, I just lost you there, if you can hear me. You cut out in the middle of your words. Okay, Chris or Rex, or hopefully Roger Roos joined us, or hopefully Ted Dunlap from Fiji. Okay. I'm hearing clicks.
There,
all right, maybe I'll... There. Okay, could you hear me while you were working on something? Maybe not.
I got some new equipment I'm working on. You hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, yeah, I've got some new equipment that, you know, I'm working with. I actually literally just picked it up very shortly before the show. So this is the organic nature of some Blog Talk Radio shows. Unfortunately, it's after I've been back to my hiatus. I'm getting a little bumps here in the road. But if you could just let me know in chat if you stop hearing me, just let me know and I'll work on it. So thank you.
Okay, good. All right. Well, I wanted to get into a little bit more about this first paragraph that's extremely important. An authorization to use military force. You know, the only way the U.S. would have an authorization to use military force is what? If the governor asks. But that's for another topic. All right. An authorization to use military force, a declaration of war, any similar authority shall not authorize the detention of a citizen without charge or trial.
But Kelly, I hate to interrupt you again, but I see an area code in here that very, very well may be one of the folks you were talking about coming onto the show. So if we may check that out, then we could go back to it, okay?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. I do have a caller I'm getting ready to let in. The area code is 208, and if this is Ted, I believe.
Yeah, this
yes.
is Ted Dunlap.
Yes, Ted, thank you very much for Dunlap. Thank you very much for calling in the show. How are you tonight?
I'm great.
Great, great. Well, tell you what, Kelly, if you want to give the floor to Ted here for a little bit, and then we can get back to you.
I'd like to introduce Ted. This guy, I talked to him earlier. Hey, the FIJA folks are awesome. FIJA is the Fully Informed Jury Association. They're great, okay? They're educating America about the great power of trial by jury. And I got a hold of Ted, and on a moment's notice, he's like, yeah, I'll be there. And he told me a great story about how he got 41,000 votes for sheriff in his district. And this guy is serious about liberty. And, Ted, why don't you go ahead and tell your story?
Well, yeah, hi. I'm the Idaho State Coordinator for the Informed Jury Association. And, you know, you look at the oppression, the fascism that's taken over, and what tools do we have left? And the fully informed jury is certainly one of them. But the another one that inspired me, I mean, I looked at my life and the threats to my life and liberty last December and said, what we need here is a constitutional sheriff. And so I took a little side trip, and I asked who would do such a thing, who would run to be our constitutional sheriff, and the mayor gave me the only answer I could find. So I ran to be a constitutional sheriff. I ended up in a two-way race. I don't have a law enforcement background. I don't have money. I don't have a big name. I don't have none of these things. I ran against an incumbent Republican in a Republican state who had plenty of financial backing if I had posed any challenge whatsoever. And all I had was my presence. I went around and talked to a lot of people, a lot of groups, and my internet. I have TedDunlap.net. I have Ada Liberty. I'm in Ada County, and so I used Ada Liberty. I created that website to kind of say, why do we need a constitutional sheriff? It was kind of a counterpoint to business as usual. So adaliberty.com, and then for 7 years I've been blogging at idaholiberty.com. So I've been really in this, and, the fully informed jury is a big part of that, but also we have Oath Keepers is a big part of it, and my big thing this year was to make a good honest run at being a constitutional sheriff. The sheriff comes from Old England, the Shire Reeve, the guy in charge of taking care of business for the Reef, the owner of the Shire. And when the Constitutional War was won, the owner of the Shire, the owner of the county, became the people. And the Shire Reef, the sheriff, became reported directly to the people. So that has potential. It has wonderful potential if we can get people to get sheriffs to do that and people understand that. So what happened? What happened is with no money and no media support, you know, they all support the incumbent with nothing going for me except a website. I got 41,000 people in Ada County, Idaho, to vote Ted Dunlap for sheriff. It's pretty amazing, really.
No, it is.
Yeah, with limited resources, minimal spending, you got 41,000 votes, which is, what, 26%?
Yeah,
that's what you got?
Yeah.
Wow, that's phenomenal.
And you ran in what party?
Libertarian.
Libertarian Party, wow. So, I'm like...
Well, really, actually, that's another point, is that the Libertarian Party in Idaho traditionally gets, 1%, 3%, 5%. So, a whole lot of people, well, thank you, Ron Paul. He came through and made a Libertarian not be a swear word anymore. So, when people saw my name on the ballot and said Libertarian, they didn't immediately respond with a knee-jerk vote for the other guy. They actually were willing, 41,000 of them were willing to vote for the Libertarian.
Yeah, and I've got a question for you on that. Do you believe that, not Ron Paul, of course, but do you believe that in some ways Gary Johnson may have hurt the Libertarian efforts in this last election?
No, he came through Idaho twice. I met him personally, talked to him twice. He was a great representative. That guy was a super honorable guy. You can feel it when you get in the presence of slime. And I've been around several of those.
I agree with that. I know many felt that, at least on the social issues, he's moved really far to the left.
Total honorable guy and not a pure libertarian. But my goodness, I've been in the Libertarian Party for 15 years, and you get into these discussions about purity of libertarianism, and it's, oh my gosh, you guys just put an ice pick in your eye. It's terrible to watch.
Mm-hmm.
we're close enough is close enough. My goodness.
I still think he, of course, offered a better option than either of the two from the Democrat or Republican Party. That being said,
yeah. Well,
let's not get off topic. Yeah, I was just curious on that. Go ahead, guys.
Yeah. Well, what's amazing is, they're saying no third party. Well, wait a minute. 26%? Are you kidding? 41,000 votes? I mean, this is serious. People are waking up. They're getting frustrated at the duopoly, if you will, the Republicans and the elephants and the donkeys. But this guy really, he's got something. I asked him earlier, I said, you got to write down your crib notes, something, something, anything, because we got to get, the Republicans either got to get back to the Constitution or they're going to be done. I mean, even other people are coming out with that now. High power players are saying something's wrong here. So anyway, but that's enough off topic. Ted, how did you get involved with FIJA, and how did you realize that this is by the way, I'm going to interrupt myself here. Okay, we're going to talk about trial by jury. We just got started. We got a victory over the NDAA, huge victory, but we're going to talk about the repugnant one. I'm sorry, did I say that, repugnant ones? The 25 that voted against trial by jury. Okay, sorry, busted. All right. So, we're going to talk about trial by jury and the absolute importance. I had no clue, okay? I studied case law. I studied this. I studied codes. And then one day somebody turned me on to trial by jury, and it pretty soon, like, oh, my gosh. I was so passionate about it. I studied it, researched it, court cases, put it in a local paper. I advertised 2 years in a row, a full-page ad. People are still coming back to me. They're like, oh, yeah, you wrote that? Oh, that's awesome. I had an awakening, okay? And Thomas Jefferson knew about this. He knew about it full well. This is a summary statement of our entire conversation here. So Thomas Jefferson said, "I consider trial by jury as the only anchor ever yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its constitution." One sentence, he nailed it. So I'm just asking, how did you come across this? What did it do for you? How did you learn? How did you hook up? How did you move forward, et cetera, et cetera?
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. That's been... I'm 63 years old. I can't remember that long ago. it's so obvious that if you took 12 people out of your neighborhood and set them in a room and said, okay, we're going to decide whether this guy should go to prison or this guy should pay the neighbor back for the lawnmower he broke. Okay, what are we going to do with this guy? And the jury would not say, oh, yeah, let's send him to prison. You know, it's just screamingly obvious that a jury of your neighbors, if they aren't being led around by the nose, are going to come up with a practical answer. And so, you know, he goes into his house at night and smokes marijuana. Oh, whoa, well, we better put him in prison over that. Well, he's a good sheet metal guy. Gosh, he does miracles when he's, or he's a great bricklayer or whatever, you know. How can a jury of your neighbors do the stupid stuff that our courts do? Well, they can't. So if we could only get that information out there, wow, we have liberty.
Well, I absolutely agree. I think what, you know, I'm gonna paint an exaggerated story, if you will, on the necessity of trial.
A little artistic license.
Yes, I'm doing it again. All right. Before the artistic license, just a simple common sense explanation, all right? The government has all these codes and laws and keeps passing more and more. There you have the citizen who unknowingly will break this law, that law. Okay, fine, but, yeah, maybe the law's out of line. A petit jury stands between the government and the accused. It's that simple. It's citizens, your neighbors, standing between you and the government. Not the government. We take this element out, okay? Let's just take your neighbors out. The government's going to come after you for what? Whatever law they ever want to write to infinity and beyond, okay? They can do this because they're the government, right? But wait. We got this group of people that stand between the government and the accused. And this has got a glorious history behind it, okay? So you have this beautiful body deciding your fate, not the government. And we'll get into historical, how horrifying the consequences have been when this body is removed from the picture. Okay? So, artistic license, here we go. All right, Steve Martin, he's a comedian, we all know who he is. He had this funny little mantra, and he goes, oh, yeah, I got the solution for overpopulation. Death penalty for parking violation. You know, it's like everybody laughs. Okay, yeah, he's a comedian. But suppose you're a jury member, and you're looking at your neighbor. Yeah, parking violation. He parked an hour too long, and the government wants me to put him to death. That's the law. I don't think so. You know, even though I don't like him, I can't stand him, but you know what? Sorry, he doesn't deserve death. This law, death penalty for parking violation? No, I'm just going to say not guilty. This is called jury nullification. That is a simple premise when people stand between the government and the accused. It's that simple. And it's got a glorious history. So, Ted, yeah, why don't you go ahead and follow up a little more?
Well, I had I was interviewed over the phone over a contentious trial in the eastern Idaho, and the defendant was passing out jury nullification information outside of the courtroom before his hearing, and so the radio guy calls me up and interviews me because I'm the CJ coordinator for Idaho. And he says, well, this guy's trying to influence the jury. And I say, my goodness. Once he goes inside, the prosecutor, the defender, the public defender, and the judge are going to try to influence the jury. This is his only shot. Well, but that's outside the court of law. Well, yeah, but inside the court of law, the thing's rigged. You know, this is his only chance to talk to them and get them to hear. Well, the radio host is having a hard time making sense of that one. But it's pretty obvious, isn't it? Isn't that real plain?
Well, obviously, the influence is left and right. The I want to get into, I'm agreeing with you, but I want to discuss with you what the Supreme Court has said, justices of the Supreme Court, as far as the power of the jury, the petit jury, to nullify the law, to judge the law itself. All right? Here's John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, 1789. The jury has a right to judge both the law as well as the facts in controversy. Here's another one, Samuel Chase. The jury has a right to determine both the law and the facts. So their first duty is to say, look, is this law even just? No, the law's not just. Look, I mean, death penalty for parking violation, I know that was Steve Martin's idea, but, you know, come on. We're not going to do that. Not guilty. All right, Oliver Wendell Holmes, he was well revered. The jury has the power to bring a verdict in the teeth of both law and fact. And then we had Webster. By the way, Webster wrote the dictionary. Why? Because he was concerned the attorneys would pervert the meaning of words and thus pervert the Constitution. I mean, who in the world would ever spend their time writing a dictionary? Oh, that's right. He wrote the Constitution. Yeah. It's like, talk about boring. I mean, that's more boring than doing engineering. I mean, you know, my favorite joke about engineers, what do engineers use for birth control? Their personalities. I mean, but to write a dictionary? Come on. Oh, no, he loved the Constitution. He wrote the jury, okay? This is 1828. The jury, according to Webster, jury, a number of freeholders selected in the manner prescribed by the law, impaneled and sworn to inquire into and try any matter of fact and to declare the truth on the evidence given in the case. And he talks about grand juries, but he's going to go here, petit juries. Consist usually of 12 men, attend courts to try matters of fact in civil cases, and to decide both the law and the fact in criminal prosecutions. The decision of a petit jury is called a verdict. All right, so decide both law and facts, wrote Webster. Why did he write that? Because that was common everyday practice. Everybody knew about it. But he was concerned, of course, that the attorneys would pervert, and which that's for another talk show. All right, we go to 1941, Harlan Stone, 12th Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. The law itself is on trial, quite as much as the cause which is to be decided. And we move up to 1972, U.S. v. Doherty. The pages of history shine on instances of the jury's exercise of its prerogative to disregard instructions of the judge. Do you mean the judge would tamper with it? Yes, they do. We should have laws against jury tampering given by the judge.
Mm-hmm.
And I passed out jury nullification flyers, and this guy, I won't go into details, but they were just coming down on him. Unbelievable. I mean, it's like flies on flypaper. And I passed out jury nullification flyers with a friend, and guess what? The guy got off. Thank you very much. And say thank you much in jest of the criminal system, because they do not want the American people to know their power as petit jury members, that they can say, you know what, not guilty. Okay, this law is out of line, not guilty. Or, in the other circumstance, the penalty exceeds a crime. Or in the third circumstance, say that, you know, laws are written generally. Why they have to be? They're just general blanket statement. But a jury can say, hey, look, you know what? In the way the law is written, I can understand that. But in this unique circumstance, not guilty. For example, you know, a 17-year-old kid, and this is an actual case, a 17-year-old kid gets a call from his drunk buddies in high school. Of course, they know he's a goody-two-shoes. And he picks up all his buddies. Why? Because they're drunk as could be. and they'd throw the empty keg in the back of his truck. And sure enough, he saved lives by getting these kids home. He didn't have a jury. Why? Because it was an infraction. No, he didn't have a jury. So you only get a jury, by the way, in misdemeanors or felonies. And what the decision say, well, you know what, I'm revoking your driver's privilege for a year. He, the poor kid, had to ride his bike like 20 miles a day to get to college. Anyway, in a jury situation, the jury can say, look, the law is too general. This kid, you know, did a favor, saved some lives, a bunch of drunken teenagers, and not guilty, okay? Anyway, so
you know, there's some pretty serious cases. The fugitive slave laws were repealed by the juries. Now, that was, prohibition was repealed by the juries. You know, there's cases where people just said, no, we can't do this. This is stupid. This is foolish. If they weren't able to select out the people that have their wits about them, we wouldn't have a prohibition today. It would be gone. The juries would toast it. And they have in several cases already. The juries have thrown that stuff out. They've refused to indict. So we can do this. The juries can do this today, anytime, anywhere.
Wow. So bringing it back to modern day NDAA, okay? NDAA, well, you know, this person here is speaking out against the government. All of us three here on this discussion would say, you know what, government? You're out of line, period. Your approval rating is, what, 19%? It's been that way for 4 months. You pass this law wanting to throw people in jail for whatever reason you feel like. Oh, that's right, because they're speaking out against you. And you have this citizen here. I know this guy. He's great. He loves his life. He's got a great family. He's working hard. And he's speaking out. And all of a sudden, you want to throw his ass in jail? I don't think so. Do you remember? Not guilty. It's over. Let him go free. That's what we have, the power. And here's another court case, Duncan versus Louisiana. The right to trial by jury is granted to criminal defendants in order to prevent oppression by the government. Duncan versus Louisiana. More recent cases, Ring versus Arizona, Sumner versus Stewart. We have the right to step in between the government and the accused when the government passes stupid, unjust laws. I mean, that's my theme here. This is a brilliant system. It's been around for, I don't know how many centuries, maybe even millennium. And so we have citizens have this power to appeal to a jury, the buffer, a referee between the government and the people. By the way, those are Justice Scalia's words. All right, so NDAA got really hurt last night, hurt big time. It's a huge victory. But we have the repugnant ones. Republicans, I'm sorry, they did it again, Freudian slip. All right, I got to get to the dictionary, okay? My old dictionary, I got
to... While I'm thinking about it, Kelly, every time you're on the show, I have one favor that I ask for you to do for me. And then while I'm thinking about it, if you just do it now, please do, because I crack up every time that you say it. You got to say it.
Oh,
Obama. Cracks me up every time you say his name like that. I don't know why, but it always cracks me up. Go ahead, guys. I digress. I just had to hear it.
Well, I it was a dictionary that kind of converted me over to the Libertarian Party, and I'm a registered Libertarian. Yes, I wrote in Ron Paul, but I'm a Libertarian registered. Okay. The dictionary one day helped me understand what the heck's going on. Some old world dictionary I had, garage sale, old, whatever. I was looking up the word repugnant. Right next to the word repugnant, I found Republican. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I heard a Rio talk show, all the repugnant ones. All right, repugnant, here it is, dictionary. Offensive to taste or feeling, exciting aversion or repulsion, being inconsistent or opposed, antagonistic. Law, contrary to or in conflict with something else in the same or another document or statute. Oh, goodness. We have The Republican's right next to it. See, what that tells me is the second you take your mind off of the word Republican, the Great Republic, the document, the Constitution, the second you take your eyes off of the Constitution, you can become repugnant pretty quick. Another dictionary had the word repudiation or repudiate, right next to Republican Party, different dictionary. To refuse or accept as valid, true, or authorized, reject, condemn, to refuse or acknowledge, to cast off, disown as a son, right next to the Republican Party. What's going on here? These 25 guys who voted against trial by jury, are you guys seriously? Like, either quit taking the drugs or give me some.
Well, and I'm wondering what their, you know, what said reasonings that they're going to have for going to, you know, as I said earlier, you know, some are saying, oh, well, there's some kind of gaps or anything in that, or it's meaningless because the wording is incomplete or in a way refers to certain parts of the NDAA. Does either one of you want to speak on any of that or have read that somewhere?
You know, I think they look for deniability. It's you know, they try to find a way that they can continue the fascist march and have an out. If they can seem stupid instead of evil, it works for them. They're okay with that. They're making money doing this. You know, the lobbyists are paying them well for this. And so as long as they just seem stupid or foolish or ignorant, we let them get away with it. We don't string them up. So that's really what I think plausible deniability is, my phrase.
Well, I mean, speak about stupid, they still have John Boehner. I've seen his, you know, bulldog-looking thing. No, it's not nice. I shouldn't say that. But, you know, I seen him on there today when they're talking about, you know, the financial cliff. Well, I'm not going to get off the topic talking about it, but, you know, Boehner talked about all the financial cliff. We got all this stuff to do and work to try for the American people, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's obvious they haven't learned anything if they're still having Boehner up there and still working with Rince Priebus. So.
Well, it goes deeper than that, Robert. I was so upset today, okay? I'm trying to stop smoking. I was doing great. Then I found out about this, and I was so stressed out I had to go bump some smoke. I'm like, this is freaking me out. This is how passionate I am about this, okay? Again, Thomas Jefferson, I consider trial by jury the only anchor every unimaginable man by which a government can be held to the principles of its constitution. I'm going to get to the motives or possible reasons why they voted for this. But what happened? Where did that statement of Jefferson come from? Well, Thomas Paine was in France asking for Thomas Jefferson's advice. Hey, you know, the French think it's kind of cool to fire their king and have a constitution. You know, they like what the colonials did. What do you think? Jefferson was actually hesitant to support the French Revolution. One of the reasons is because the French people did not understand trial by jury. And so he wrote Thomas Paine back. This is July 2nd, 1789. He wrote back and said, hey, look, one apprehension I have about the French Revolution is the French people did not understand trial by jury. And that is the only anchor ever yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of the Constitution. Well, guess what? The French actually listened to this letter. And the French instituted grand juries and trial by juries. And their effect was so strong, the citizenry holding the government to account, that the French had to repeal a number of precepts of the harsh Napoleonic law. They had to rewrite the laws. Why? You write a law that's not enforced, it's no law at all. You pass 10 more laws that mean the same thing. The jury say, no, 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 no. Finally, you have to go back in this country's history. We had to do this a number of times. You can't get convictions. Go back to your state legislature, rewrite the laws. This is the power of trial by jury. We literally can legislate from the jury box. They're saying, no, you're not doing this, no, you're not doing this, no, you're not doing this. This is our power. Of course, the powers that be do not want the American people to understand this.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Well, the
French listened.
They think that they can stack the Supreme Court, or they can stack the state courts, the appellate courts, and they think that Once they've got their guys in those positions, they own it. But that they only own it if we are ignorant. They only own it if we are foolish enough to not recognize the power of the jury. You know, NDAA can work because they scoop people up without ever giving you that jury trial. But in most cases, you've got a shot at getting in front of the jury. And I know people who insist on a jury trial for little stuff. They won't plea bargain. They won't do any of that.
Hey, Ted, you're breaking up. You're breaking up a little bit. I don't know if it's a connection thing or
you're
far away from me. Hey, go ahead. Go ahead, Ted.
Okay,
does this sound like you're breaking up a little bit?
Does this improve it at all? I don't know.
A little bit. Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, just you're breaking out, like, you know, it was hit and miss on hearing what you had to say. Go ahead.
Oh, darn it. Sometimes the cell waves don't work as good as others. I don't know the deal.
No, that's okay. Go ahead. We hear it good now. Hope that keeps up.
So anyway, you know, people think, well, if the Supreme Court said this, well, then it must be so. That is not so. If the jury of your peers says it's so, it's so. If they say that you should go home to your family, then bingo, you go home to your family. It doesn't matter who ruled what and who wrote what law. If the jury of your peers says this guy is not guilty, it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, this all started in the 1680 or something like that with the William Penn
1680,
trial.
Yes.
William Penn was on trial for preaching something other than the Church of England. He was a Quaker.
And he was speaking out against the king. And people before him who spoke out against the king were hung.
So the jury said, yeah, we're not going to convict him. He's not guilty. So the judge threw the jury in prison and says, now will you convict him? And they said, no. No, we're not going to convict him. And that, 1680, is when we got trial by jury. It's been around. It's been our tool if we wanted it ever since.
We got more than that too from the famous Bushell case. Okay, the juror's name was Bushell, and the judge threw them, or under the order of the king, the judge threw Bushell and a bunch of other juries into prison without food and water for several days. The public found out, and, you know, pretty soon they're arming themselves with pitchforks and what have you. And pretty soon the king says, all right, go ahead, and we're going to let them out. We're going to let Bushell and his other jurors, I'm going to live with whatever decision they say. And they said, second time, not guilty for speaking out against the king. He was a preacher on a street corner. And from that, we had the freedom of assembly, the freedom of speech, and the freedom of religion written down in British common law. These amendments in our Constitution flow well before the amendments. And it came to us through the beautiful, glorious works of jury members. This is the power we hold as jury members in trial by jury.
The trick is to get us to understand that, to get everybody to understand that. That's the challenge.
Now, so, you know, there's times I like to bring things in from the chat, you know, because I really like when people in the chat participate as well. And someone brought up this when we're talking about not legislating, but from the jury box. I know the essence of what was said, you know, about legislating and in the chat, they're talking about, you know, of course, that'd be negative protection against the law, as they said. So would you like to speak anything on that, on what was said in the chat? I mean, we can't technically, as was said, legislate from the jury box. But says,
yes, we can. Here's how we do it. Here's how we do it. Say the law is out of line. This jury nullifies the law. That jury nullifies the law. Pretty soon, it's so expensive to go absolutely nowhere and then in road that they have to remove the law from the books. This is what the French did in the 1800s. The guy wrote a book about this. We can actually, if we know this power, and it happens enough, we can start taking laws off the books. Why? Because the district attorney's office and the judicial system operates like a business. Why would you operate and do anything when there's no profit?
There's no gain. There's no nothing. You can't convict these people. Let's take these walls off the book. Let's stop getting these cases in our courtrooms because we're getting nowhere with them. That's the right of the people as juror members.
Wouldn't an example of that be someone who is in front of a jury about some kind of, you know, like marijuana, you know, charges or something of that nature? Is that something what you might be referring to?
Well, yeah, that's a great modern-day example because, number one, you know, okay, let's go back to the common law, all right? Common law tenet, real simple. Harm no one, their property, or their rights by willful injury or neglect, okay? If you're harming yourself, who cares? Harm no one, their rights, or their property by willful injury or neglect. Okay? It's that simple. You smoking marijuana, who are you harming? Okay? I don't smoke marijuana. I'm not an advocate for it. But if there's no one else injured, what's the problem here? So what do we have here? We got a system that convicts people because they have marijuana. Well, what's that do? It costs the money. It costs the state a lot of money. Why? Because we got to put people in prison. We got to take them through the whole court process. What a waste of time and money. It's like, come on. You know, again, I'm not an advocate for marijuana, but look, who are they harming? Okay, if they get in their car and they have a wreck, yeah, put them in jail for what? We already got laws on the books for injury, and we got civil attorneys to deal with the damages, okay? But if they're staying home and getting high, what do I care? Okay? They're damaging themselves. Why is the government asking?
You know, if they're treating a disease in a state that doesn't have medical marijuana, or if the feds come in and want to push against medical marijuana legalized by the state. Those are all times when if every time the government, every time the agents try to make this a federal case, the jury throws it out, they're going to give up real quick.
And I wonder if that's what's happening in Colorado and Washington. They awaken to this power. It's a waste of time, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, they got a referendum passed in both states.
Mm-hmm.
What's the problem here? Who's getting injured? I mean, you know, other than the munchies, they don't go out driving. I mean, you know, drive through at McDonald's because they get the midnight marijuana munchies. But
actually, Jay Leno last night, and he also had had a brain freeze there. Newt Gingrich on last night. Jay Leno did, you know, one of his skits or whatever, he had a commercial he made about what happened there in Colorado with Santa Claus. Instead of someone left him something under a note or a candy cane or something like that, but instead of leaving him a leave commercial. And at first they talked about the back pain of Santa Claus and they had some leave there. And so he took the leave or whatever and they said, but this is new in Colorado and it had underneath this note to Santa was a couple joints or something like that. And the funny part about it was, is, you know, he takes a joint, but then he takes, like, the whole tray of cookies with him. So I just wanted to put that humor, that commercial in there. You mentioned, you know, the munchies, and it had Santa Claus. He's grabbing the joints, and he, you know, grabbed up all the cookies as they left. So and the first commercial was just a leave. He just grabbed a couple cookies. But then when it's, you know, the joints, I guess, for pain or marijuana for the pain, he grabbed the whole plate. So it was kind of funny just to, you know, interject that a little bit there. But go ahead, guys.
Well, yeah, here's the biggest problem, okay? I'm going to start going into the history of what happens when you don't have a grand jury. Oh, by the way, you know, there's debate how old the petit jury is, trial by jury, jury mason jury, all right? Some say it goes back to Pharaoh. There was a judge from San Francisco, brilliant dissertation on this. He said that at times the Pharaoh's hands were tied by a jury. The Hebrew system, they had, you know, their big council, and they had a jury system. This thing is older than the famous Bushel case of 1680. So we just happened to codify it in the Sixth Amendment. So this history is powerful, and, you know, back then it was a no-brainer. I mean, it was absolutely a no-brainer. Yeah, trial by jury, good idea. Oh, by the way, they wrote the Constitution, 1787, they approved it 1788, 1789, they realized when they first met in Congress, oh, well, sorry about that, guys, we forgot the Bill of Rights. I mean, just kind of an oversight. No, what happened was, in practice, pretty much all of the Bill of Rights were already in practice, were already assumed, they were already in the minds of every colonial, every American, but they decided to write it down for future generations. So they put in the Sixth Amendment. That's why we didn't, you know, that was why the big, oops, sorry about that, guys, we forgot the Bill of Rights. It's because it was in practice. Everybody knew about it. But brilliantly, they put it into writing so that we have it into eternity. Now, what happens when you don't have trial by jury? This is the scary part, okay? And I don't want to scare people. I don't want to keep them, you know, not sleeping at night, but this is the reality, okay? The Russians had trial by jury from 1864 to 1917. What happened in 1917? Of course, the Bolshevik revolutions. Within 20 years, 20 million people were murdered at the hands of their own government. Whoops. Yeah, we kind of need that trial by jury. I mean, hey, you know, the government didn't like you. No citizens stand in between the government and the accused. No, you're dead, okay? You just don't like my policies, so Stalin, you're dead. Weimar Republic, 1924. Oh, that's right. They had trial by jury from 1848 till 1924. Oh, we don't need this trial by jury thing. Within 20 years, 20 million people were dead. Why? Adolf Hitler had his power and did all this stuff. And by the way, neither of these countries had a grand jury. All right, you take Communist Mao, China.
Mm-hmm.
They did not even have trial by jury. They had kind of a trial by tribune. The judges decided, you know, I think it was 7 or 9 judges, whatever it was. Okay, who paid them? Oh, that's right, the government paid them, okay. So Mao says, you're going to do this because I'm paying you, and pretty soon he took over a country that didn't have trial by jury, and within 20 years, 20 to 40 million people were murdered, okay. This is what happens when you get rid of trial by jury. This is what happens when you eliminate that great body that stands between the government and the accused. Sorry, this is what happened, okay. And, okay, there's more bad news, let's see. There's the UN Declaration of Universal Rights. Oh, universal rights. Oh, yeah, sounds good. What's missing? Let's see, the right to own a firearm, the right to trial by jury. This is George Bush George Bush, under his administration, we gave Iraq a constitution. Yeah, we've conquered you. Hey, we're going to give you a constitution. What's that? Oh, we believe in Islam and Muhammad and all that stuff, you know, whatever. Okay. Well, here's the constitution. We're going to give it to you. You know, you guys don't want to think about it. Let's see. Not mentioned in there is the right to bear arms and no trial by jury. What's going on here, guys?
Well, it's obviously a trial by jury is definitely a barrier. You know, you talk about the NDAA and the president's right to decide that some people should die and just get it done. That doesn't happen when you've got a jury trial standing in the way.
Now it's time to quote Patrick Henry. Okay? Of course, we all love this man. Why do we love this trial by jury? Because it keeps the hand of oppression from cutting you off. In this I have comfort that as long as I have my being, my neighbors will protect me.
And speaking of grand jury, two things, Kelly. This one, for the new folks out here, and thank you very much for the new folks coming in. And if you like what you hear so far on Bard's Logic Political Talk, I'd ask you to just consider to follow the show, and it's real easy to do so. Just go to the homepage of Blog Talk Radio, the homepage of Bard's Logic Political Talk on Blog Talk Radio. And underneath the icon, you'll see a little follow button. Just click that, and it's real easy, just following the show. And also, speaking of that, too, is, Kelly, we've mentioned this on other shows, as you have, for the new listeners out there, you also have a book that talks about the grand jury. So why don't we talk a little bit about that, and then what some of the accomplishments that the federal grand jury's had in taking care of some corrupt politicians.
Well, let's start again. I'm back on the theme of what happens when you get rid of the beautiful body that stands between the government and the accused, a referee or buffer between the government and the people. Again, those aren't my words. Those are Justice Scalia, U.S. versus Williams, 92 case. All right. So, in this country, we've had, well, you remember the Rodney King situation? Rodney King, oh, yeah, you know. a grand jury indicted the officers to beat the crap out of him. Rodney King didn't know squat about the grand jury, but what happened? He went to Fox and said, hey, you know what, I got this video. I want $10,000 for it. They watched the video. Here's your check. They heard it over and over. A grand jury was convened. Boom. The officers were indicted. They were convicted. When the Supreme Court says, no, you're staying in jail, buddy. You're going to violate somebody's rights like this. You're done. This is the good news. David Warren, New Orleans police officer during Katrina, shot a gentleman by the name of Glover. Thought he was a looter, but he wasn't. He was an innocent man, and they shot him dead while the New Orleans Police Department decided to cover it up, him and three other officers. Grand jury got him all, says, huh, you're done. You're going to jail. But, you know, Mr. Warren, all the way to the Supreme Court, no, you're going to jail 22 years. We don't care. You violated citizen's right. Oh, that's right. The grand jury investigated, indicted. He was done. Again, this is a body that stands between the government and the people, a buffer, a referee. Well, let's look at England, okay? God bless England. 1215 AD, reigning England, they passed the Magna Carta, which was what? The grand jury. Oh, that's right. C61, that's another story. All right, that's where the grand jury got to start, as well as petition for redress.
Hello, is folks still there? I see that he dropped off. Yes, I see that Kelly dropped off. Ted, are you still there?
Yeah, I hear you. He was cut off on my end, too.
Yeah, he must get cut off. And then, yeah, I know there's another person who came on who looks like they got dropped off as well. I don't know if there's been some glitches this evening. I apologize for the folks if that is the case, because we did have another person in chat who... not in chat, but I mean, who was on. I was getting ready to let them in. So I believe it was 406. If you are still out there listening and you'd like to, or it's 408 rather. If you were on the line, you got disconnected, feel free to call in. I did see you there. I was getting ready to let you in. I just did not want to interrupt Kelly for the second time. And hopefully, Kelly will be able to call in again soon. And here's 408, just came back on the line, and I'm going to open up the mic. I believe this might be another folk we were looking to come into the show, but I will open up the mic and find out if that is the case. So 408, I am opening up your mic. Is this Roger?
Hello?
Yes, this is 408.
That's it, yeah. Is Kelly on the line?
He was. Unfortunately, it looks like the line was dropped. That happens sometimes. He'll get in a bad spot or area or something, and the line will drop. But I anticipate that he will be back shortly. This happened before where his line is dropped. So.
Okay. I had a question about the jury system. It may be only specifically able to be answered by him, I'm not sure. Basically, and maybe when he gets back on, he can answer the question for us. I'm a close friend of Kelly's. He out there in Wairika, I've visited him on a couple of occasions. I'm sure some of his judicial proficiency has to do with our late night weekends out there. He's a fun guy to be around, as well as incredibly intelligent. So. The question I have is a very simple one. In today's climate, in the courtroom climate, there's a lot of intimidation. There's a lot of professionals around people. Often they aren't educated and they're unsure of themselves. There's some insecurities, and they don't feel they feel almost intimidated out of choosing a jury trial. And what I want to know is that if someone decided on a minor offense, you know, like if they were set up for a crime of serving or giving alcohol or buying alcohol from a minor, you know, set up by the police, which just happened to me on one occasion, and you just feel like this is wrong, you know, and And if a jury were able to hear my case, they would, you know, 90% of people would think that this was an unjust arrest. Is it difficult to get a trial by jury? And then, moreover, if you get your trial by a jury, are you going to be punished for it by the courts? Is there a financial liability for it? Like, in other words, can everyday citizen get it? And if everyone knew this and everyone had that took that power into their hands, would it clog up the system? You know, I guess that's the question I want to ask to the host or any of the guests that are on right now.
I think if I was facing a charge like that, I would insist on a trial by jury, and I would be my own. I'd put my own defense up, because I would, as a defendant, when you're represented by the state bar, they're not going to use jury nullification as a defense. But what I would do, you know, I wouldn't put myself on the stand. I wouldn't let them make a fool of me, because these guys are wordsmiths. This is what they do for a living. This is what they spend their life learning how to do. So don't give them that. But when you get to cross-examine, when you get to do your opening and closing statements, you explain to the humans, the 12 humans, the power that's in their hands. And they can't stop you at that point from telling the jury about jury nullification. They can prevent it in a lot of different procedural ways up until that point. But they can't stop you from doing your summary. And your summary explains...
Yeah.
The whole point of the jury system.
Yes, yes. So, if I'm understanding you correctly, let's just come up with a hypothetical, because I think that's the direction we're going in. I could go before a court and say, I would like a trial by jury. Now, at that point in time, I would either be representing myself or have a lawyer representing me. If I represent myself, I have the power in the court to make an opening and closing statement. I probably don't want to be my own attorney. But during the opening statement and during the closing statement, I can tell the jury, listen, you are putting the law on trial just as much as you are putting me on trial.
Mm-hmm.
So if the law to you seems unjust in this specific instance, then let's criticize the law through our power indebted to us by the Constitution. Is that correct? What you're saying is that I would go and represent myself. You know, what would that look like? I mean, what would it look like?
I have several friends who really get into the legal and lawful, and they can chase the law down in ways that you and I could never dream of. But they have studied it so extensively. But you can have anyone sit with you and give you advice, as you can be the lead attorney. You can actually have another attorney working for you. You could actually get a public defender to work for you and just say, I'm sorry, you're not in charge of this. You're not in charge of my defense. I appreciate your help, and I need you here for advice, but guess what? I'm doing it my way anyway. And so you can run your own defense. And you can bring anybody. You can bring me in there. And you can say, he's just sitting here. Well, he's not practicing law. He doesn't need a license to sit here with me. We don't need a license to talk to each other, you know, so you really can own your trial.
This is so illuminating. I mean, it's impossible for me to understand how in modern day society this has been hidden from us. If you go into a court, and there are so many obnoxious laws out now that are just revenue-driven laws, but if you go into court today, and you go into – it is such an intimidating environment. If this were the reality for people, then I think more people would take the risk. More people would say, I want my right. I want a trial by jury. Now, I guess I want to bring it full circle to my original questions. Are there barriers to getting your trial by jury? Like, as a common citizen, are there barriers that are beyond the intimidating, beyond the psychological barriers, right? The facetious kind of illusory barriers. Are there any?
No, there are not. Barriers. The barriers are we have been trained from childhood to death. We have been trained that this is a society of experts, and we trust our experts. I mean, you go to a high school, and a quarter of the building cost is in the Coliseum, where everybody in the student body sits in the stands and watches 20 experts do their thing. And you know, you're sitting in the classroom, you've got an expert. You watch television, you've got an expert. Everywhere you go, you are trusting experts instead of trusting your own mind. And so we fear our own logic. We are afraid to cut our logic loose. We are afraid to do, well, that doesn't make sense to me, but oh, well, what can I do? I just don't understand. I'm not the professional. Well, you know, you when you go to a doctor, sometimes you go, well, I don't really want to do that. Well, I'm the doctor. I'm prescribing this. I don't know. That doesn't seem like it. You've got to trust yourself. And you got to go into that courtroom and say, I am every bit as whole and complete as that guy with the robe sitting on the high chair.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and when I imagine something like that, I can't imagine how powerful that would be for people. I mean, just even the institution itself, to see a citizen taking control and saying, look, I'm going to apply my common sense, you know, and I'm not going to be afraid of, I mean, how often do we shriek in fear of things that are just basic, like common sense, that this is a moral right or wrong? Yet the law, and in that specific situation, it's ridiculous. But we shrink in fear of the law, and the courtroom's environment. I think when I, you know, in those situations where I've been there or been in the audience or whatever, it has this intimidating air about it where, like you said, I'm the doctor, I'm the professional. You know, the psychological experiments of shock, the Milgram experiments. That was what it was all about. It was about authority. An authority figure standing above you and saying, keep doing this thing that you know is morally repugnant. And I think that for the public to know that that's, you know, that that's the issue, that's awesome. You know, I mean, it's an awesome power that we have. And I didn't know about it until, you know, tuning into your radio station. So what you guys are doing here is extremely valuable for the public, and I'm really happy that this has been organized and this is happening.
It's designed to intimidate. Look at the design of it. It's not a level floor. It's not a level playing field. It's not a big round table where everybody is equal. No, there are lesser and greater people, and it's all psychologically keeps you down, keeps you uncomfortable. You know, this isn't my room. I can't stand my ground.
Okay, guys. I'm chatting right now with Kelly. He is having some technical difficulties, and he's working on getting things together to call back in. I just thought I'd let you know. So if you hear a little silence from me, I'm continuing my chat with Kelly. We're getting some things together for that, but he does want to come back in, and he definitely wants to talk with you. So go ahead, guys. I apologize for interrupting. I just want to keep you apprised of what's going on. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah. This is good to know. I mean, recently I've noticed a lot that's happening in our world, in our society. And I have daily conversations with people because that is where my mind space is. I mean, I'm the frog in the water that's actually feeling the heat. So I steer conversations, you know, on a daily basis. And I want to examine other citizens because I want to know if there's a disenfranchised population and there's power there for people to get together. And actually, I've spent some time strategizing with Kelly on how to do this. And like we're all understanding that this is what's happening now. But I think you just answered one of the most important questions for me, which is I think the fear, the illusion that we don't have control. When I hear a good example is like 9/11, you know, you talk to people about that and say, well, they wouldn't let something. We won't let these things happen. But that's a bad psychological rationality is a better way to approach things. Like, well, let's examine things. Let's look at things. Let's not come up with some emotional, irrational idea like, that just couldn't happen. You know, that's just not a possibility. But, I mean, I don't know. It's just really This jury, this is a very powerful thing, and I just wanted to get on and say that I really, really appreciate what you guys are doing to inform the public here. It's awesome. It's powerful, and I feel better about
it. Well, that's good. I've got one more thing that might make you feel a little better. I have Kelly back on the line. Great to hear you back, Kelly.
Yeah, I...
there we go.
Difficulties, all right.
That's okay. Right. It happens. We all have them.
Okay. So, anyway, I was talking about this... this whistleblower organization in England that suffered horrific consequences when they told about corruption. You know, we're talking about employees get fired, they get divorced, people can't handle it because the government in Great Britain has committed a fundamental flaw. Well, they got rid of their grand jury in the 1930s. They started in 1215, a grand jury, good idea. They just, oh, let's get rid of this thing. Well, you know what? Gavin McFadden, he's the director of the Center for Investigative Journalism, stated that there is a British tradition. It is a tradition now. Just a tradition. Yeah, 1,000 whistleblowers have been killed by British police. Not one conviction has happened upon these policemen. But yet, in this country, because of the grand jury, we have Rodney King's oppressors. We got the the problem in New Orleans dealt with because of the grand jury. This is how bad it gets. You know, we talked about trial by jury. You know, Germany, Russia, Mao, 20 million each. When we get rid of this great body of people that stand between the government and the accused as buffer referee, between the government and the people, we have tremendous oppression. And that is why citizens need to learn about trial by jury by joining FIJA, or at least go to the website, FIGA, Fully Informed Jury Association.org. FIJA.org, learn this power. Oh, that's right, New Hampshire. All of a sudden they passed a law. They said, hey, look, you know what? We're going to allow the defense attorney to tell the jury that they have the right to nullify the law. We are going to watch the next few years where you're going to see New Hampshire have a lesser conviction rate than any other state in the union. This is what's going to happen because as we stand between the government and the accused, we say, you're out of line, government. Sorry. Get lost, okay? So this is the whole theme, okay? Sign up for jury duty, register to vote, then you get a summons to be on jury duty. Again, Thomas Jefferson, I'm sorry to be redundant, but it's so important. I consider trial by jury as the only anchor ever yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its constitution.
Yeah, everybody talks about getting out of jury duty, and yet it's the,
right, that's true.
It's the opportunity to make law. It's the opportunity to really affect your society.
Well, I've actually never been called to go to jury duty. Unbelievable, but I never have. I never had that opportunity to do that. But yes, you're right. A lot of people that it's just a pain. Well, of course they miss work and they miss, you know, things of that nature. And I think it's, you know, also kind of, you know, indicative of how, you know, the electorate or the American people are electorally as well when it comes to getting involved in the political process. I think they'd rather just want to leave it up to somebody else to do it instead of, you know, getting out there and do it themselves. They'd rather just, you know, stay home and watch Dancing with the Stars or, you know, things like that, the what I call the unreality reality shows, instead of participating in things that are... I mean, they'd rather call in to, you know, vote for, you know, somebody's dancing or someone singing or something like that, spend hours in front of the TV, hours and hours in front of the TV, just so they can hurry up and get on the phone and vote five times for, you know, something that really doesn't matter instead of participating in something, you know, such as this show and others, such as the, you know, Tex and Rex show, which can be heard on Sunday evenings between 10 p.m. and midnight. So, you know, things of that nature.
Well, Robert, I want to throw something out to you, buddy, okay? I mean, I dearly love what you're doing, okay? But I have a little bit of a different viewpoint about the American people, okay? I wholeheartedly believe in the American people. The problem with the American people right now is that they feel helpless. They feel, hey, there's nothing I can do. The judges are corrupt. Everything's corrupt.
That's
blah, 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 corrupt, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but wait a minute. If we empower the American people, they will make the right decision. Why? Because freedom and liberty has gone to not just the core of their being, not just to the genetics, but into their soul. When we give them tools at which they can do this, 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 oh, my gosh, they're on it. That's the American people. That's the American people I love. They are there. They're on it, okay? So let me tell you a story, okay? A story of which I was juror number 9. I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm so excited to be here. I'm sitting on the actual seat. There's a judge. There's a courtroom. Everybody, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Well, when you go into jury service, you have to fill out a questionnaire. Do you know about jury nullification? And I was stupid enough to write, yeah, Tumwater versus Stewart, Ring versus Arizona, Duncan versus Louisiana. Oh, my gosh. So it gets to be about noontime. I'm just sitting there for a half an hour. Okay, yeah, woo-hoo, I'm going to be a juror. Yeah, okay. I mean, I was so excited, okay? I know I got a buddy. He's like, he's so excited to be a juror member. Well, okay, we're going to recess for lunch, but, you know, you, juror number 9, we need to talk to you. Uh-huh. Stay late. Okay, I don't know what's going on. So I stay late. Everyone's out of the courtroom, and they go, all right, we're going into chambers. What? So I go into this room, and there's the defense attorney, there's the prosecuting attorney, and there's the judge. Juror number 9, what do you know about juror nullification? Oh, I know quite a bit about it. You know, I go to these court cases, and pretty soon the judge is looking at me like, you know something. Next thing you know, we go to lunch, we come back, and then what happens? Oh, that's right. Okay, first order of business, juror number 9, you're dismissed. What?
Wow.
You're dismissed with cause. Now, you have a whole bunch of juror dismissals without cause, meaning, you know, I don't like the way you look, you're dismissed. That's without cause. With cause. Juror number 9, you're dismissed without cause. Why? Because I opened my mouth about jury nullification. The judge and the prosecuting attorney are scared to death of jury nullification. The citizens having the power to say, government, you're out of line. But God bless New Hampshire, live free or die state. They have said very clearly in their laws now, the defense attorney may inform the jury about jury nullification. Judges are in the process of dismissing jurors who know about jury nullification. This is how chronic this problem is. Look, we've got a country, okay, we have the highest incarceration rate per capita, but yet we have the hardest system to finally convict somebody. Why is this? Because the jury is told by the judge, and if I actually watch this in court, you must judge the law against the facts. You may not research on your own. Oh, really? So the next time I get into that position, okay, that position of, do you know about jury nullification? I'm going to say, Your Honor, I also know about the grand jury, and I'm going to submit a complaint if you try.
There you go.
If you try to dismiss me for juror nullification, you know, grand jury complaint, this and that. Yeah, you're obstructing justice. I wonder what the grand jury would think about you obstructing justice. Oh, that's right. Samuel Chase, Supreme Court Justice, in 1905 was impeached by Congress. Why? Because he was denying the right of jury nullification. Do you have any idea what you're up against, Mr. Your Honor? Go ahead, you know, dismiss me, but I'm just going to ask you, do you know about grand jury complaints about judges who obstruct justice?
Wow. That's incredible.
Hey, guys,
go ahead.
I wanted to interject here. I'm really, really, really happy that this forum is happening, and I'm going to keep listening in. I'm just going to get off the line, but I just want to say hello to Kelly, and always, you know, I'm a big, hey, how you doing? I'm always fully behind you, man. I really, really respect you and look up to you for writing that book and getting the word out. So thanks a lot for having me on, guys. I'll still be listening in, but I'm gonna duck out right now.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming into the show. Of course, you're more than welcome to come back at another time.
Thank you. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, take care. And generally, I get, I put out the for you to talk a little bit about your book, just for a few little bit, you know, where folks can find it, the name, things of that nature. So if you'd like to go ahead and use that time to do that, that'd be great. And then for the, while he's doing that, if any folks would like to chime in, just call area code 347-945-7428 and just hit the 1 button on your phone dial to let me know you want to chime in. And go ahead, Kelly.
Well, yeah, the book's on Amazon, but more importantly, you know, we just have to join up. FIJA is a good organization. Years ago, when I wanted to put it down in the paper, they were there for me. And every now and then I hear stories in my county, because I put the ads in the paper, that, oh, my gosh, you know, I thought this guy was guilty, but some juror said not guilty. Like, that's the point, okay? Most people who are stuck in the matrix, they've taken the blue pill. I'm sorry. Those of us who are bold enough to take the red pill, we know this. And we're telling the government, you're out of line, okay? I'm sorry. Okay, you didn't hurt anybody. What's the problem? We've got to learn this great, you know, FIJA.org, FIJA.org. You know, this movement has grown nationally. The point pressure on New Hampshire, we got to watch New Hampshire. I mean, this is, and the NDAA was really hurt, very hurt last night. Trial by jury, yes, citizenry. Only if we as citizens know our power.
You know, what's most heartening to me is with the media working against him, the Republican Party working against him, Ron Paul was filling stadiums. Gary Johnson was, you know, getting a better welcome than the Republicans and Democrats were getting. I got 41,000 votes without really anything behind me, without any major justification for that. People are seeing NDAA. People are seeing executive orders, hundreds of executive orders, just doing things by whim, like an emperor, you know, a despot of time gone by elsewhere. It's not our free country. So people are looking. People are ready. You know, people are ready in numbers that, you know, they may not know where to go. They may not know exactly how to fight. But, goodness, they're open, and they're open like never before for trial by jury to get this back, for nullification. Things are getting discussed that have, I don't know, it's an exciting time.
Well, one thing I wanted to add is real simple, okay? What is harder to eradicate than a virus?
Uh-oh. Sounds like you guys still there? Or?
He broke up on me. I don't know.
Yep. Unfortunately, his line dropped again. I'm sure he'll call back in if able. Perhaps he'll send me a message later on. But for the folks who are in here, if you'd like to read more about what you've heard tonight, you can go to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, and that is an easy way to get there. Just go to the link that you could find on the Bard's Logic Political Talk homepage here on Blog Talk Radio. It's on the front portion where you found to get inside the show to listen to it and join the chat, or to listen to this episode in the archives. Just click that and you will see a couple links on the Get Involved page. And you will also see a button that says Save an Elephant on there. And I think would be a great Christmas gift for a young one is something by the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, in which you can donate for only $50 a year. It could greatly help out a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers for their ivory, which ivory is a big sale for a lot of the China. A lot of the ivory is going over to China right now, and it's also unfortunately being used. The sales of this ivory to, you know, a lot of the Chinese buyers, is going to fund a lot of the wars that are happening over there, a lot of the brush wars that are happening over there in Africa. So, you know, to help the organization, because they do also fight against poaching over there, just go ahead and check it out. And if you also can see that on the Bard's Logic Political Talk Get Involved page. And as I said, it'll take you to the homepage from the link you can find here on Blog Talk Radio. So check it out. As I said, it makes a great Christmas gift. And also you can find on the Get Involved page a video, a touching video of a rescue of one of these baby elephants. So just want to put that plug out for the wildlife, the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust and their efforts. And I will bring it back to you.
Okay,
you
know,
well,
we're talking about the jury nullification. There's other things. There's I'm involved with Oath Keepers, and Oath Keepers is came out of Hurricane Katrina, where the National Guard with the Texas Utah National Guard units were told they were going door to door tomorrow to confiscate firearms, and the National Guardsmen said, "Wait a minute. We have something called a constitution. I can't do that." And they got talking amongst themselves and indeed went to their commanding officer and said, "Sir, we can't do that." And the commanding officer told FEMA that the guard unit was not going to go confiscate firearms. That was the foundation of Oath Keepers. Oath Keepers is just trying to get current and past law enforcement and military and, you know, any civil servant who swore an oath to the Constitution to uphold their oath. So an Oath Keeper is someone who just says, "I swore an oath, and I still mean it." And that's, there's no political activity beyond that. Anyway, so that's one thing that has hope. You know, you go to Sheriff Richard Mack's Constitutional Posse. I think that has a lot of hope. There's 200 counties in the U.S. that have constitutional sheriffs, and a constitutional sheriff really will defend the people against violators of the Constitution, no matter where those violators come from, whether it's some everyday burglar or whether it's somebody under cloak of law, under pseudo law. There, the constitutional sheriff can protect the people if you got one that's doing his job right. And then there's, of course, what we're talking about today more is the jury nullification. And there's also the 10th Amendment Center, where you go to your state legislatures and your governors and you say, "Wait a minute, the states created the federal government. The federal government is the child. The federal government is not the parent. We cannot let the child take over here." And so, anyway, there are various tools out there that we can use. I mean, if your states understand the role of the state government vis-a-vis the federal government, you got liberty. So, you know, if people uphold their oath, you have liberty. If the sheriff is a constitutional sheriff, you have liberty. If the jurors do their job properly, you have liberty. We have all these checks and balances built in there, and we've been numbed, intimidated. We've been confused or addled, whatever it is. We have the ability to get this back, and like I said a little while ago, I'm excited that so many people are waking up now. And, yeah, they may not know exactly, you know, the Tea Party, the riots in Europe. They may not know exactly who the enemy is, but darn it, they're getting pretty pissed. You know, this is enough.
Well, I'd like to say that Kelly is back on. We've got your line open. So, Kelly, if you'd like to chime back in, go ahead.
Well, I'm a member of the POP party. That's the peed off people, to be professional. If I said it in the vernacular, it would be the beeped off people. All right.
Well, we could say pissed off here in Bard's Logic. We just don't like the F bomb and GD. That's about the extent of it, and things of that nature, or or, you know, vulgar words. So go ahead.
Okay, well, I'm a member of the Pissed Off Party, and the POP is going to, like, totally rock here. And if you're, especially the youth, oh, my gosh, the youth, they loved Ron Paul. That is our hope, because they realize something is chronically wrong here, and something just ain't working with the GOP or the Democrats, except for the Democrats got it right last night. I'm on record, okay, the Democrats got it right. What's wrong with our country when the Democrats are getting something right? I mean, they're defending the Constitution. Okay, let's our artistic license again, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Paine, all right? He wrote, you know, that great document that encouraged the troops in the Revolutionary War. These are the times that try men's souls. He motivated the troops. I mean, oh my gosh, it's a tearjerker when you read it, especially the hell that the colonial soldiers went through. All right, so let's suppose, oh, by the way, he was from Great Britain, and he saw the disparity of wealth between the upper class and lower class. He said, I'm out of here. I'm going to colonials. All right, artistic license again. So he's going in a ship across the Atlantic, and he somehow ends up in the Bermuda Triangle. Zip, he ends up in 2012. And he ends up today. And he's like, oh, wow, okay, I'm into politics. I'm going to go ahead and look at the political scene, what's going on here. I love trial by jury. Oh, they had a recent bill. Okay, this great amendment, okay. You know, it was the 3018 to the NDAA. Well, let's look at it. Oh, gosh, the Democrats supported it. You know what? Because they like trial by jury, I'm going to go for the Democratic Party. Thomas Jefferson, time warp, zip. Oh, trial by jury. Who supported it? Oh, the Democrats. I'm going to go for the Democratic Party. What? We are in weird times here.
Mm-hmm.
License again, but what in the world is happening when, oh my gosh, there's a party that actually believes in the everyday people to hold government accountable, and the Democrats are doing this? Again, I can't believe. I mean, I'm looking, you know, if I can have an out of body experience, looking at myself, like, what am I doing here? I'm supporting the Democrats who supported this amendment to the NDAA, which is a victory for the American people.
It could very well just be a smoke and mirrors and just to confuse the people. You know, because people are confused, like, well. You know, what is this? You know, they're normally, you know, would be something. But also, you know, look who's in, look who's in the White House. And as you said, we live in strange times. And, you know, perhaps it's to further confuse the people, because I really believe that they're using confusion and scare tactics to keep the people in line to bolster this duopoly that is obviously not working for us. But by confusing us, then I think, they can keep up with, bringing us down the hill where they have the control. And what we've been saying, even through when there was the primaries, is that it's becoming where the politicians, with the president at the head is kind of the king, and the politicians are the oligarchs. And where does that leave, we the people, or at least we the people of what? The serfs.
Exactly. And this is one great tool, VJA.org. We can start repealing some of the laws, get government off of our backs, start having a more prosperous economy. I know it'll take years, but folks, you get a jury summons, please go. I mean, it might be some person who was, the NDAA, so you're a crazy person, you're da-da-da-da-da-da. Sorry, we're just not going to, that's right, the NDAA, now you have to get in front of a jury trial before you put somebody in jail indefinitely. Oh, yeah, that's right. I believe in the American people. When the American people are empowered with knowledge, they'll make the right choice.
Well, I hope so. We've talked about this briefly, before us, but I was, talking about is too many people. And I think, perhaps what you said earlier, why people just sit in front of the TVs and not participate. And maybe there, and I think there actually is a point to what you were talking about earlier, is about they don't think that they can make a difference. And I think that, you know, they've been led to believe that they can't. But, you know, I guess I'm, you know, sometimes a critical individual where I think, well, okay, even if you get, you know, you get knocked down, you always have to get back up. And I feel like, you know, yes, you know, the American people have been knocked down, but, you know, instead of staying down and just giving up, then you really need to come back because, I mean, it really is where the future of America is not supposed to be in the hands of the politicians, which that's where it has been very much so lately, and that's why we're in the position that we are, instead of it being in the hands of the people. I think that, you know, the politicians really definitely have, you know, the power now, and we're going to have to, you know, stand up, you know, against that. And right now I don't see that happening that much. I mean, we spent billions. Well, we did, but there was billions of dollars spent in this past election, and we've heard countless times that this was the most important election of our lifetime. And where are we at? We're in pretty much the exact same position we were, 4 years ago, you know, with the makeup of what we're looking at with the House and the Senate and in the White House. I mean, all that money, all that time, where you thought true change would really have happened. See, that's what baffles me. You know, and this is why maybe I'm kind of, I feel a little jaded, is that this last election supposedly being the most important election of our time, all the money and all the time spent with it, okay, when, as I said, real change could have happened, and it didn't. It didn't. We're still in the same spot. I think more people are awake, and that gives folks hope. It gives me hope, you know, but we're going to need more. But I just thought that this election would have really brought the people, would have really brought change. I think third parties would have had a bigger showing, but I think the reason they didn't really is telling of the scare tactics that both parties used, you know, against the people. And so,
you know who really won the election? Did you notice who got the most votes? More than ever, more far away, 77% of the eligible voters voted for none of the above. That's a new record.
77%.
77% of the people who could have voted in this election said, "I don't like any of the choices I'm seeing. I am not voting."
Well, it was voter turnout. I never got the numbers on voter turnout. Was it really that bad?
Yeah. That's a number they don't want to share with you, because what we're seeing is this is like a rebellion. These are like 77% of the people say, "No thanks. I really don't want to participate." Sure, a lot of them are lazy. We can just say, "Oh, okay, a whole bunch of them are just too lazy." But that number is huge.
Well, let's take a step back here, okay, and work our way towards what you just said. All right. When I watched the first CNN debate with the Romulan and Obubu, who was the winner of the debate? Well, that's dependent upon the question. The question is who you're most likely to vote for. And, well, let's see. The results were 47% neither, 36% for Romney, and like 19% for Obama. 47% neither? What?
Well,
they actually posted this on the screen. Somebody caught it on a screenshot. Whenever we're on Facebook. Oh, my gosh. Only if Obubu and the Romulan get together can they beat the neither. Oh, my gosh, 40%. Oh, now there was, like, the third debate. Somebody caught it and it was only verbal. So, like, it was up to, like, 52%. 51, 53, I can't remember what it was. But it was, like, neither. And so what's happening is we are having a paradigm shift amongst the American people. The American people are saying, "Look, we're tired of this. We're tired of the duopoly. They're playing games. They're lying to us. We know that. We're tired of it. We're done, okay? We can't handle this anymore." So we are seeing a paradigm shift, and we are in a precipice, if you will. Precipice means, you know, paradigm of change. And we can actually see some really good things happen soon. We just have to keep empowering the American people with knowledge, information, you know, yeah, okay, jury nullification, grand jury, okay, fine. But we have to keep this up, and we will continue to draw numbers to our movement, and we are going to be victorious. It just takes time. We got to be patient.
And speaking of patience, you know, I'm reading some articles and looking over some articles here and there, where there are some folks who were saying, you know, yeah, you know, it passed, you know, the amendment passed, but here's an article that Rex gave us, and Feinstein-Lee NDAA amendment passes, but is it enough? I mean, what do we say to the folks that, you know, are of the mind that, well, yeah, it passed, but, you know, there, of course, could have been more done for this. What would you guys say on that?
Well, any step in the right direction is, I mean, we've been going so steadily in the wrong direction. Goodness, to even stop going in the wrong direction is progress.
Yeah, and that's kind of what, you know, what I say as well is, you know, something is better than nothing. And, yeah, I mean, don't tout it as a huge victory. You know, I mean, it's definitely, you know, a victory, but, you know, not as big. You know, there's still, as someone said, you know, definitely more work that needs to be done.
Well, Confucius say, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step.
Yeah, yeah, you know, eating the elephant one bite at a time, it's all good.
Yeah. Well, here's another analogy I heard years ago, okay? There was this big tidal wave that happened, and a bunch of starfish ended up on the shore, and of course they're going to die. Thousands.
Yep, I like this,
you know, it was
story.
A couple miles long. And some guy just had some, you know, sympathy for these starfish, and he's going along the shore, tossing each one back into the ocean, another one, another one, another one. And this guy said, hey, look, what are you doing? He said, I'm helping these starfish. Ka-plump, ka-plump, ka-plump. Well, what does it matter? It matters to this one, ka-plump. Yeah, but what does
yep.
it matter? It matters to this one. It matters to this one. When we get on a jury, grand jury, trial by jury, it matters to the person involved. And that's the power we have. And this is what we can do. And if we, gosh darn it, God bless these, okay? They are making such a stink, they're amassing such members and such power, that what's happening is, oh my gosh, a whole state, New Hampshire, said, all right, okay, the defense attorney may inform the petit jury of the right of jury nullification. Oh my gosh, we are having an impact. We are moving forward. We are making progress.
Yeah, it really is. That one is a big deal. I mean, that was that's probably as pivotal as when Florida passed concealed carry and when California passed the first medical marijuana. Those are pivotal moments when the people finally say, you know, they raise the BS flag. They just say, enough. And,
well, what do you guys see? What do you got future wise? What do you guys see more on this then? Do you see more being done with it?
Numbers are looking good. I'm seeing people waking up, and as they wake up, they're gonna come join whatever movement makes sense to them. And so we, you know, the Oath Keepers, the 10th Amendment Center, the Fully Informed Jury, Tea Party, whatever. Reaches out and touches them, they're going to say, you know, and whether it's like in Europe where they're just rioting and just rebelling in general, anything is better than just accepting your lot in life, accepting your role as a peasant or a serf.
Well, I totally agree because, you know, you look at Somalia, okay, they're used to busting rocks by hand, okay? Other countries are used to suppression, oppression. They're just used to it. I'm sorry, Americans, we have a different standard. Liberty has gone to the soul of our being. And when we are empowered with tools, we will make the change, we will make it happen, we will bring forth, we will get back to our roots, because our roots worked. Our roots worked, our constitution, free enterprise, the right of the individual, the right to own land and keep what you produce. Okay, it's working. And somehow, even though the oppression is trying, you cannot fight a virus, the mental virus of liberty. You can't fight it. I mean, yeah, you can try, but the American people are going to rise above this. We are. We are going to do this. And we just need the tools. We just need the power. We get busy, and it's get her done, okay?
Well, and speaking of that, I see there's only about 10 minutes left of the live portion of tonight's show. And I'd like to take, you know, I usually take about the last 3 minutes for the closing song, and then some time after that. So in about 4 minutes, I'll probably close things out, unless folks would like to do an extended version, which, of course, we've done in the past, which isn't live, but it is recorded for those who would like to listen to it later on in the archives. We'll see how it goes. But if anyone would like to either chime in or stay in and listen to the extended version, if we do indeed go to that point, the call-in number is area code 347-945-7428. Welcome to chime in on anything that you have heard this evening. So, as I said, we got about 3 minutes before I do start to close out, unless we do go into the extended time. So we'll go with our guests, and then we'll go with Kelly. And so, Ted, go ahead, and if there's any last things you'd like to say, at least for the live portion of the show, go ahead. And then after that, Kelly, we should probably get about 2 minutes. Thanks.
Well, I want to encourage people to just weigh their world with their brain on, with their brain engaged, to look at, to you know, the mind is like a parachute, it only works when it's open. That to take your world that way, and when it makes sense that this 500-year-old concept, the 1,000-year-old concept of a fully informed jury, does it make sense that the elected representative can scoop any of you up because he feels like it, because you offended him? If, you know, these things, does it make sense that you are taxed and you send your money to a law enforcement agency that can scoop you out of your home in the middle of the night without cause, without any accuser, without any grand jury, without anything, and not even tell a soul that they scooped you up and spirited you away? If it makes sense to you that these things are okay, if it makes sense that, yeah, sure, I pay to have that done. Yeah, that sounds cool to me. If that makes sense, you're a sick puppy, you know? I mean, these things just are obvious. They don't make sense. So we've got to, you know, the Gulag Archipelago had a great line in there, you know, is how we seethed in the prison camps when we realized that if every time those guys came out, every door they knocked on, they didn't know if they were going to live. If we laid an ambush with broomsticks and pick handles and the kitchen knives and whatever we had, sure, we'd lose some, but they'd lose some too. And eventually the cost would be too dear, and they would stop going around taking us away to the prison camps. So, you know, we have to bullies understand force, period. You know, you can plead all you want, but bullies really only get it when a superior force comes along. And we, the people, are that superior force. We've got to avail ourselves of the tools that are within our grasp.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed, very much so. We do have a caller who has called in. If you'd like to chime in, just hit the 1 on your phone dial, and that'll let me know that you'd like to chime in. If not, that'll let me know that you just want to listen. And so go ahead. I've got about a minute there for you, Kelly, before I start to do the closing out. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a huge victory in affirming the right of trial by jury as an amendment to the NDAA. I'm sorry, the Democrats got it right, the repugnant ones. I'm sorry, the Republicans, okay, 25 repugnant ones voted against. What are they thinking, okay? We have got to get to a point where we understand this great power. We don't care what our congressmen say. We just say, hey, you know what, jury nullification, not guilty. We're not going to send a citizen to indefinite detention. We have the right, as citizens, to stand between the government and the accused, and we are going to be free. We know this power. We live it. We do it. Government's going to be in a tailspin because the citizenry is saying you're out of line. So that's the whole point of jury nullification.
Okay, great. And I see that we only have about 4.5 minutes of live time. I see another 208 would like to chime in. But before I have you in, 208, I'd first like to thank everyone for coming once again, whether it's live or on the archives. And I'll say again that if you would like to read further on any of what you heard tonight, there are some links that can be found on Bard's Logic Political Talks website. Check that out, as well as check out the link where you can see the button that says Save an Elephant on there. And for only $50 a year, you can donate to the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, in which you will sponsor a baby elephant. I believe they'll send photos and information about the baby elephant that you are sponsoring. And what happened is the elephant's parents were killed by poachers who were going went to steal the ivory, of course, for the ivory market over there in Africa, which is being funded a lot by China, and a lot of that money is being used to kill people in the brush wars and the wars that are going on over there. So it would be a great Christmas gift. It would be a great alternative Christmas gift for a loved one. And so please check it out. Appreciate it. And there is a contact page on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. And if you go ahead and contribute, if you'd like, you can just let me know. I can give you a shout-out and on your great gift. And so we see have about 3 minutes left. I do have 208 on. I'm not going to shut things down. So there will be a extended time. So once again, if anyone would like to listen to the extended time or chime in, the number is area code 347-945-7428. So everyone who will not be able to make it to the extended version, once again, thank you for coming. Hope to see you again. And take care and good night. With that, with 2 minutes left of lifetime, I'm opening up your mic. 208, if you could just give us your name, location, and what's on your mind. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thanks, Robert. This is Floyd calling from Idaho, Constitution Party guy.
Okay.
I did want to make one point. There isn't really such a thing as a social panacea, or those are very rare, and that includes jury nullification. One of the things that wasn't discussed, of course, is that jury nullification itself can be abused, and has been the case in the past. So I guess a call for caution, perhaps, is what.
All right, I want to address this. I want to address this real quick, okay?
Sure, go ahead. We've got plenty of recording time for those who are listening to it live. And then you can listen to the archives either later on tonight or tomorrow once the show ends. So go ahead, Kelly.
Okay, what would you rather have, okay? Adolf Hitler, who is abusing all sorts of rights, he's abusing, you know, the right of due process, the right of trial by jury, the right of cross-examination, the right of – would you rather have Adolf Hitler abusing and killing millions of people – or one Charles Manson who gets off by some, just a little quirk in the law. Which would you rather have? Oh, that's right. Charles Manson kills, what, maybe a dozen people, maybe 30 people. Adolf Hitler kills 30 million people. There is a point to due process of law. Government is force. Like fire, it is a willful master and an unruly servant. Oh, that's George Washington's words. So every now and then, yeah, trial by jury might get it wrong. The grand jury might get it wrong. But it keeps this great power out of the hands of the government, who happens to kill millions of people. Oh, and that's right. If Charles Manson kept doing what he was doing, some citizen who was so furious with him would kill Charles Manson. Why? He doesn't have Secret Service around him. He doesn't have the SS protecting him. You know, these people that say, oh, yeah, you know, I am, there's some kind of abuse going on here, there's a trial by jury, a grand jury. Look, the government has more power than we even know about. And it's point-blank spooky. Who's going to hold them accountable? Yeah, the trial by jury and the grand jury might get it wrong every now and then, but if the government gets it wrong consistently, what do you have? Adolf Hitler, okay? Which is the lesser of two evils? I guess that's my question. What's the lesser of two evils? Charles Manson getting off every now and then, or Adolf Hitler getting off? I mean, sorry to come down on you so hard, and I don't do this very often, but look, we have a system that is set up for enormous tyranny. You going to worry about the abuse of a few or the abuse of a million?
Well, I would interject that that's not exactly correct. And again, what I'm suggesting is precision. To say that we have a system set up for tyranny is simply not true. It has the potential for that. I agree. And that was recognized. In fact, I messaged Robert. One of the things that you could and probably should use in the defense of your position is the preamble to the Bill of Rights. It presupposes that government abuse is omnipresent, and our Foundation Fathers understood that, and they said that in the preamble to the Bill of Rights. So I understand what you're saying, but I also understand that, at the end of jury nullification, could very well be a lynching, taken to extremes.
On the 1 or 2%, I mean.
I think it would be, I can imagine a culture, I have a difficulty imagining a jury of my peers turning somebody loose who posed a threat to the community that they're turning them loose in. You know, these are people who have families and have brothers and sisters and moms and dads and children. My gosh, there are 12 people in this jury box, and they say, shall we let this Charles Manson guy go or shall we not? And wow, if a jury says, I don't think he did it, he probably didn't do it. But, you know, it's better that 100 go free than one innocent is put to death or incarcerated. So I just think the occurrence of the jury making a mistake on the side of caution would be rare enough that I'd rather take my chances with that one.
I would rather take my chances with the citizenry deciding right and wrong based on their conscience.
Well, I don't have to be convinced here. Again, I repeat, I'm a member of the Constitution Party. Again, there is no such thing as a social panacea, and so when you start speaking in terms of governance, whether that's local or national, and in some cases international, I suppose, you have to be precise, and rabble-rousing has some bad effects. And so, again, it's not that I'm not supporting the concept of jury nullification. Jury nullification is assumed as a de facto right of the jury. As soon as the jury is impaneled, it is assumed that jury has the ability to determine the law. So again, you don't have
but
to
they
convince
don't know their
me.
Power. That's the problem. That's what we're saying.
That's never assumed by me, and again, that's an imprecise statement. It's
for you, that is correct, but most people, 9 out of 10 people, do not know they can judge the law when they're sitting as jury members. They don't know this. I've seen this in court over and over. What I'm saying
not
is,
not in all cases is that true, though. That
in
it,
all
the,
bases,
the jury,
I mean,
the jury cannot do that in all cases. The authority of the jury, at least in our system of government, is not supreme. There are many, many restrictions on the power of the jury that's placed. In fact, I believe it's the fifth, Article 3, Constitution, clearly says that it is the Supreme Court with appellate jurisdiction over the law and the facts. And so, in other words, the jury nullification is not supreme in the sense that it cannot nullify a law. It can nullify the law in a specific application in a specific case, but it cannot nullify the law. It does not have that.
Would you mind telling me one case of the United States Supreme Court that overruled jury nullification?
I don't have any information to. I don't have that data in front of me, if that's what you're asking for.
Well, I will tell you, I've already told you on a bunch of court cases here that the jury, the Supreme Court has ruled
I will stipulate
on the power
to your
of jury nullification.
Experience. I stipulate to your experience and expertise. But again, that was irrelevant to the point. The point is, that jury nullification can be abused. There is
it
no
can
such
be.
Thing
I agree,
social,
and I agree
there is
with
no
you.
Such thing as a social panacea.
Right, I agree. I totally agree with you that the jury members need to get into precision. They need to examine things even further. Ask the judge, hey, we want to know more about da 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 da. Precision, 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 so we get closer to justice. I agree with you on that.
Well, the judge, you mentioned that you were removed for cause. In many jurisdictions, the judge has long had that capacity and that authority to do. And so, you know, the only solution to that, if you took offense to that, would be recall of the judge through an impeachment. But the judge does have that authority.
Right, he has the authority, but is it moral? Let me tell you a story, okay?
Right.
Judges aren't perfect. God in
heaven.
Neither are
jurors.
Correct. We are living in a fallen state. Now, James Manship issued a complaint to a grand jury over a corrupt judge he'd watched for years. He issued the complaint to a grand jury in the morning. That afternoon, the judge retired, claiming early retirement. Oh, that's right. You were so corrupt, somebody finally called you on it, went to a grand jury. Again, that great buffer of people between the government and the people who were about to look at this judge. He said, I'm done. Well, yeah, you were called on your corruption. We need to have accountability, and accountability with precision. I'm agreeing with you there. We need precision. We need people who are able to look at the facts, look at the law, look at the precise circumstances at which brought this whole thing to trial, and make a just ruling. And only I can say the best benefit we have is the ancient text of in the abundance of counselors there is victory.
Well, going back to the precision, again, this call really was about the NDAA and the Feinstein Amendment. And I've seen one of the problems on the constitutionalist side of things, the conservative side of things, the right wing, if that's what you want to call it. One of their problems is that they are often reactionary, very imprecise. And so in the specific, and I don't want to put motives in the minds of those individuals who voted against this particular amendment, because I don't know what their reasoning was, their risk of stay, I guess it's called. But at any rate, I think I would look at it a little more precisely than what you have. The amendment that she put forward specifically said an authorization of military force to declaration of war or similar authority. And then goes on to say that there's no, it shall not authorize detention without charge or trial.
Right.
And of course, it was also even more specific, apprehended in the United States. Apparently that doesn't apply to those apprehended outside of the United States.
Well, there's a reason. That was the Military Commission Act, but that's another story, adjudicated
right.
by Boumediene versus Bush.
But Amendment 5 in that Bill of Rights, I suppose if you were to have a reason to vote against it, it would be that Amendment 5 in some respects provides an exemption or an exception to what Feinstein is trying to get at there.
Do you mean the Fifth
Amendment?
Amendment
5. I mean Amendment 5. Amendment 5 of the Bill of Rights.
Amendment 5 has nothing to do with trial by jury. The only thing they discuss.
Neither does, my point being, neither does Feinstein's amendment insertion that was attempted to. Amended to the NDAA. It is specific. Her amendment was specific to military force under a declared war or similar authority. And the Fifth Amendment in the Bill of Rights grants, in essence, an exemption in that detention or apprehension, held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime, except in cases arising in land, naval, militia, and so forth.
Let's go ahead and read the Fifth Amendment, okay? Got it in front of me. No person shall be held to account for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases running in land or naval forces, i.e. military, or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be put in jeopardy or life and limb, nor shall be compelled in any crime against a case to be a witness against themselves, nor to be deprived of life or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. That's the Fifth Amendment. It has nothing to do with trial by jury. Trial by jury is in the Sixth Amendment.
Correct. And Mrs. Feinstein, Senator Feinstein's amendment was to a military act, and it was specific in reference to military force and declaration of war. And because of that, the exception of the Fifth Amendment could very well apply. And so, in other words, Feinstein's amendment is probably irrelevant.
That's a pretty heavy statement there. Okay, irrelevant. Wow. Okay, well, let's go ahead and explore that.
Because the exception exists in the Fifth Amendment. The exception to the very specific circumstances which Feinstein attempted and did apparently amend into the bill.
All right, let's go with that for a little bit, okay? Except in cases arising in land or naval forces, cases arising in the Army or the Navy. That's how I read that. Or in the militia. We don't have to worry about that because that's a long story. All right. When an actual service in time, in service, that goes back to the last sentence, Army or Navy. When in actual service in time of war or public danger. Or public danger. I got to circle the public danger part.
Well, now you see the loophole. And also, again, the exception exists, and it may well be, and to borrow Virgil Goode's statement, you may not want to hear this, but there are circumstances and have been circumstances in times of war and in times of national danger where the apprehension of individuals was necessary for public safety and public security.
Okay, so again, define public security, though.
Well, certainly, certainly as in my recent historical memory, I guess, of looking at various laws and so forth, in World War One, there were certainly those done under Woodrow Wilson, but there were also apprehensions during World War II and immediately before and immediately prior to that. And those apprehensions, by the way, were necessary. There were, for example, up in the Atlantic states, New York specifically, but New Jersey, there were instances of German American members, if you will, had infiltrated labor unions, and they were actually sabotaging aircraft that were being manufactured in New York and then eventually out at Warminster in Pennsylvania. And so the apprehension of these individuals took place, and it was done surreptitiously. And the reason it was done is because Nazi Germany had several individuals that they had posted into the United States, and we did not want them to know that we had, A, apprehended them, and, two, we were obtaining information from them, which ended up, by the way, working to our advantage, if you will. I'm laboring on a point here, but again, I'm calling for specificity and less reactionary things.
Okay.
Well, it goes to a bad place.
Well, I want to ask you a favor.
Mm-hmm.
I would appreciate if you friend me on Facebook, Kelly Z. Mordecai. Your precision, okay, and your ability to discern different points. I don't find this very often in people. And you have a point here. You have several points. was Feinstein saying, look, trial by jury before you put somebody in jail forever? Or was she working on a loophole? Most people don't think about precision like you do, and you have pointed out some points to me. I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is I got to think about this. But at least, you know, I view this as, in general, this is a positive step forward, that the NDA doesn't have a blanket statement to just throw people in the slammer because they're speaking out against the government. That's a positive step forward. It's a matter of details and who do we put in, who do we not in jail. At least we let the citizenry decide whether this person... Oh, that's right. He owns a donut shop. You know, I know this guy. I'm just not going to put him in jail because he's speaking out against the government versus somebody else who might be, you know, a German in the manufacturing plant putting flaws inside of bombers or military equipment. You know, you have some specifics here. But, yeah, I'd appreciate you friending me on Facebook.
I think that'd be a good idea too.
let me tell you, I've had him, Kelly, on the show on multiple occasions. Had the opportunity and the honor to interview him a couple times about his book. And yeah, I definitely think that it'd be a great resource, and he's a great person as well to you know, to have that kind of relationship with. I know over time, Kelly and I've definitely, you know, built a friendship, and you know, through knowledge and through cause. And I really think, you know, I think that'd be a good idea myself. So.
Well, I'm already, though I don't do a lot of writing, I think I'm already friended to Kelly anyway. But I wanted to point out something too about this reactionary thing, and it is something that constitutional citizens do need to keep in check, or at least keep it in mind. Sometimes reactionary things, statements, beliefs, they don't necessarily lead the right way. Here in Idaho, for example, our state senator from my town, but right up the road, actually, she ended up cutting and pasting a proposal, if you will. It was written by an attorney out in Tennessee, Judson Phillips.
And I'm familiar with Judson Phillips.
Yeah, and the proposal itself was compared to what the Constitution says, and it purported to be constitutionally based. The proposal was irrational because what it claimed existed in the 12th Amendment did not exist. And it simply did not work that way. But the point is, the Tea Party people, and in this case our Republican state senator, grabbed that cut and paste reactionary plan thinking and ran with it. And unfortunately, after several hours of deliberation, others said, "Hey, wait a minute, that's simply that's crazy. It's not founded in a constitutional basis."
They need to be more careful where they're getting their information.
Well, exactly. And I don't know, analyzing it with less, reaction bias, for lack of a better way to put that. Again, I only wanted to call up. It's not that I'm disagreeing with jury nullification at all. In fact, I believe citizens should take their power into their hands. If they don't, someone else will take it from them.
That's for sure.
But jury nullification can be abused, is my point.
Yeah,
That's
it can be. So can the grand jury. So can judges. So can DAs. So can sheriffs. It can be abused. And, well, what do we do about it? What was your name again?
Floyd.
Let's see. If I look you up on Facebook, I'll type Floyd. Oh, that's right. I'll have hundreds of Floyds. But yeah, go ahead.
Type me in as FW, and that will show up.
Right.
FW?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, here, I got a message from you. So, I don't mind being challenged. I just... If you can point me in the right direction, that's great.
It wasn't a challenge. It was a call for precision. I don't mind getting in a fight, but I would prefer that the rounds hit the target or hit what they're being aimed at, because I'm underneath some of those rounds and I might get hit with them if they're not precise enough.
Well, just to let you know, I have a degree or two in engineering, and I'm into precision. If I'm not precise, I end up in court.
Yeah.
And applying that to the Constitution, to the intent, causes me to have a perspective that is, what's the word I'm looking for? lost in the mind of most Americans. So if Robert Nye and his crew, if we can awaken the American people to at least more precision, I think we're going to have a better country, freedom, liberty, justice, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a challenge to communicate these to people, and somehow you've attained my attention, and you got my you have my respects. I just you know, at the same time we're on damage control mode.
Mm-hmm.
How do we prevent our federal government from becoming so damn oppressive, and yet letting the citizenry decide? Look, you know, 9 times out of 10 we're going to get it right, but government, you're out of control. How do we help the citizenry understand the precision necessary to say, you know, 99% of true justice, here we are. That the goal is precision. And I've learned that I can only communicate so much, and people only get so much, but, you know, precision is the ultimate goal. How do we get people there?
Well, I have said numerous times to my own party, and we're working on that as we speak, by the way, in St. Louis.
Yeah, we're...
Excuse me?
No, I was just going to mention how we, you know, interviewed very many people here on Bard's Logic from the Constitutional Party.
Well, what you have to do, and I told them, the work starts on the morning of the 7th of November. That was the morning after the election. And that's going to be difficult work.
But nonetheless...
There might be on January 1. Anyway, we're doing the work. It's not like we have forgotten. It's not like we're going back to sleep. There are some things that we're doing, not at liberty to say, but at any rate, we are doing the work, and it is work. It's drudgery. But nonetheless, if we don't do it, no one else will. So I don't know how to answer Kelly's question. I don't know how to get people actively involved and willing to attempt to strike a match, not for burning something down, but to seeing where they are in the darkness. But we're nonetheless at least providing some fuel and some spark, and eventually perhaps we can put some beacons up in the dark. That's all I can say.
Well, that's really good. You know, Missouri, the state constitution, you guys, you had a...
He's in Idaho.
What?
Did you say Missouri? I know you're in Idaho, right?
Correct. Yeah, I've talked to the people in Idaho. I mean, we're a political party. We talk to people, email people, or work with people, and so forth. And so we're planning on continuing the work.
I tell you what, Floyd, I had the opportunity. I would say the day after one of the third-party elections, it was a Wednesday, I had the opportunity, indeed the pleasure and honor, to have lunch with Virgil Good. We got to spend about 40 minutes with him, met his wife and a couple other folks. And I tell you what, he's just a genuine, down-to-earth guy. I tell you what, I've been meaning to get a hold of him, just, you know, about him coming back on the show, talk about some numbers, things of that nature. I had some things where I had to put the show in a little hiatus, but I'm working on things to remedy that. So, but yeah, I'd definitely like to have Virgil, and of course, you know, Randy as well, you know, and also Don Schrader, who I'm sure, you know, you well know. So, but yeah, I got the opportunity to do that, to meet him, and it was a great experience. I really appreciate it too, and I tell you what, he's just a great guy.
Well, I didn't want to, again, I was not in disagreement with Kelly at all. I was basically being retentive, so to speak. Specificity.
Yeah, well, one of my challenges, okay, having a degree or two in engineering is, I mean, look, I can bore clients to death on details. They don't want to hear details. They don't want to hear da-da-da-da-da quick enough. Okay, yeah, well, gosh, wow, that sounds great. Ironically, when I get into details, I seem to lose clients. I don't know why it is. If I just write just few enough words, I win them over. I can't understand this. So I have learned to communicate in general terms, although it's frustrating, and I know there's 10 times more, and I'm ready to answer 100 questions if you want it. How do I communicate enough to the American people to empower them to begin to love the Constitution, for them to understand and study with enough precision in their own mind that they get behind this great movement of liberty? It is a, you know, it's one thing to know it, it's another to communicate it and catch other people on fire. It, the communication aspect of this is a great challenge.
Well, that's always been the case. And this day and age is no less different than any other time. Those working for social betterment or justice, if you will, very often, if they're doing it legitimately and properly, they very often are never heard unless time works with them, you know, the fates, if you will. And I guess I would look at it in terms of getting Americans actively involved and understanding their own government and becoming their own government. I would think that the fates are going to have a say before it's all said and done. One of the things, and I think I made this, I think I might have mentioned this to you earlier, I would take issue, and I think it's an educational thing too, I take issue with the false concept that the three branches of government are the president, the Congress, and the court. That is not true. And this works and goes, actually, it supports your call for jury responsibility and so forth. The proper answer of America's three branches of government are the federal, the state, and the people. That's the proper answer. And so people have been mistaught, if you will. They fail to understand that the people are actually the third branch of government. Otherwise, you cannot explain the Ninth and the Tenth Amendments.
Right. Well, another explanation of the different branches of government are the ballot box, the jury box, and the ammunition box.
Yeah. Well, in essence, that's probably... I don't know, a different, a colloquial vernacular, if that's what you want to call it.
Right, about, but each of these boxes, okay, yeah, again, the ballot box, the jury box, the ballot box, the jury box, and the ammunition box are based on what? Citizens' initiative, citizens taking responsibility for what's going on in the government. And again, we were established on a government ruled by the people, or we the people. Your analogy was very good, too. Do we get back into a simple explanation of everything? Well, sometimes when we get too simple, we make all sorts of mistakes. And again, I'm agreeing with your precision. And how many Americans have taken the time to understand?
Right.
You know, when we understand that we're responsible for our government by the three boxes, or as you've mentioned, three different systems, not necessarily three branches of government. When we understand that we actually do have an influence, when we do exercise our influence, we can actually make a change. And that's why I go back to believing in the American people, only if they're educated and empowered.
Well, the empowerment part, that goes back to Tahlil Gibran, the Lebanese poet, for lack of a better analogy, I guess, in The Prophet. He wrote that I can lead the student, the disciple, he used, to the shadow of the temple, but I cannot make him go inside. And those conditions, he wrote that incidentally in 1920, I think, is when he wrote that poem. But at any rate, that's nothing new. It's not like it's a new phenomenon. I would submit, though, I don't necessarily agree with your take on simplicity.
I don't agree with my simplicity either. But how do I get it into somebody else's heart? That's the challenge. It's the details, the precision you're talking about. We have to talk about simple things. So, okay, people get it. I vote. Okay, now I'm off to the next thing. Like, I got to get to a soccer game. All right. I don't. You know, as an engineer, I can't stand simplicity because engineers that do simplicity, they get sued. Engineers that get into the details, they understand it, and their designs are precise. Contractors get frustrated. It's like, well, look, it's right here. Oh, I'm caught in a world between I know what the details are and how I would build it, but I'm not a contractor. I just have to design it, get my engineer plans out, get them stamped. How do I get it into their heart so that they take the ball and run with it?
In defense of simplicity.
Okay.
I still like this guy already.
In defense of simplicity, I would submit that even if you had a Bugatti Veyron costing in excess of now, I guess, $3 million, a very technical, complicated piece of machinery. However, all of it, the whole of it, will not run if you have flat wheels. And so simplicity, I wouldn't underestimate its power, is my point. In terms of government, and I think as we approach this so-called fiscal cliff, simplicity is the only correct response. Again, you have this massive Bugatti Veyron federal government, but the wheels are flat, and it's not going to run. And the only way to fix that is very simple. You have to go simple before you can go complicated. Without simple, you have no foundation. And by way of example, I think you can get many people excited by being the devil's advocate in some respects. For example, if I was to mention the word Confederate, that evokes all kinds of negative emotion. Mm-hmm. But yet those are reactionary emotions because they have not looked, and it is possible that you can communicate, as long as you're precise, you can communicate some simple concepts of government that actually did work. For example, if I was to amend, besides getting rid of the 17th Amendment by repeal, if I was to make any amendment to the Constitution, I would go directly to the Confederate Constitution. And I would amend, for example, they have, where the heck is this? It's Article 1, I think, Section 9, Clause 20, Confederate. Every law or resolution having the force of law shall relate to but one subject, and that shall be expressed in the title. That is the clause. Very simple. But yet what we've allowed to have happen is, instead of that straightforward simplicity, we've added a lot of verbosity to it. And when you've done that, you've added the potential for catastrophic failure. You've increased it. And also subterfuge, if you will. And so in terms of fiscal matters, I think passing fiscal bills, spending bills, ought to be done one at a time. It ought to be done one at a time. Now, they say, okay, well, we don't have the time to do that. Oh, really? Well, you've had 4 years, and you still have not passed a legitimate budget. Not yet.
In a balanced, not nearly a balanced budget at that.
Exactly. And so passing spending one at a time. You know, and if the people of the country believe that a bridge in wherever Alaska needs to be built, then they will approve it. You know, and if not, then they won't. And so those are the types of things I think, in terms of modifying the government and getting the people back involved, they need to. Those things need to be done, and countering, if you will, the perceptions, the reactions. Again, talking the word Confederate, and you've got an immediate negative response. But yet, there were some things that they had right, and that was one of them.
Yeah, but one of the problems that they had, it killed, put a dark shadow on everything else, was that, you know, you can own slaves. It's like, are you serious? Confederate, look, you got some good points here, but in the simple mind of most Americans, your Constitution is going to cause you to enslave black people? Like, come on. It's like the North just didn't go for that, and they threw the baby out with the bathwater. And
mm-hmm.
so they blew it, okay, in their Confederate Constitution. They blew it. Brilliant points everywhere else, but no. You throw out the baby with the bathwater. So how do we come up with a pure, true, great Constitution? I think the Founding Fathers nailed it. But, you know, and of course we had some amendments. We got it straightened out. But you know what? It goes back to the simple, how do we communicate simply and attract them to more precision? I don't know the answer to that one.
The simpler the better is my answer.
Right, but the problem is when you get into the details.
Are you talking about simple, like the way they write newspapers? Or never mind, I digress.
Well,
when you say, okay, take Obamacare, for lack of, I mean, that's a very simple term, and it evokes all kinds of emotions, plus and negative and all, but it is a simple term. But that bill was close to 3,000 pages, and that should never be. Again, it goes back to the simplicity, if you will, of Article 1, Section 9, Clause 20, Confederate Constitution. Every law or resolution having force law run one subject, and that'll be in the title. One subject. And yet you're passing these multi-omnibus bills and getting away with funding this government that has flat wheels. So going back to the wheel, is where we need to focus. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. We need to make sure that the wheel works. All the other fancy stuff on top of that, if you can get somebody to buy it down the road, that's fine, but you've got to get the car rolling. And so the simpler, the better.
Well, I totally agree with you in the sense that how do we take the typical American citizen and say, hey, look, you know what? Our federal government is a vehicle with flat wheels, square wheels. It ain't working. We all know this. How do we get back to round wheels? How do you communicate simply enough that you get the massive amount of voters to get back to where we need to be? It's oh, gosh, the devil's in the details, but the public wants simplicity. It's a communication challenge. Oh, gosh, it's hard.
Well, the concept of the duopoly, and I've used that term forever, it seems like, but that has to be challenged. In effect, particularly with the 17th Amendment in force, you no longer have any checks and balances to the federal government. And so, despite patriotism, and I'm a patriot, I've served my country under arms. But
well, thank you for your service to our country.
But July 4th, to me, almost becomes chintzy. It almost becomes, ritual, if you will. Because with the current construction of the federal government, those 50 stars that are supposedly on that flag, they are on the flag, but they're meaningless. In effect, what we've done is we've reduced those 50 stars to only 2 stars. And we're pretty soon getting close to only having 1 star on that flag. But there are 2 so far, and that's the R and the D star. There are no such things as states anymore. And in fact, given federal size, power, and so forth, the states don't exist, and counties don't exist, and in many respects, cities don't even exist anymore. They've been federalized.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting back to how do you make this work, you have to start at the local level. Dunlap was on. I don't know if he still is or not, but and I mentioned this several months ago, in fact, that it is the sheriff and the local commissioner. That's where you have to focus at. I mean, yes, that's simple, and it's not national, but it is also more or less like the wheel of that Bugatti Veyron. You have to have something that rolls and something that works, and that's where you would focus at, in my opinion. And incidentally, on the sheriff, I think Dunlap was using the term Shire Reeve, from which we got sheriff. Actually, it is much earlier than that. That's a unified English term much later. It was actually Gerifa, and that was Icklinger or Saxon. So the office came with the people, and I've probably explained this in an email or whatever to people because I can be redundant. But at any rate, one of the most powerful offices is, in fact, the sheriff. And there is a reason for that. The sheriff, the Gerifa, is, in fact, the only elected official in our system of government, the only one who is directly responsible to, directly elected by the people, the third branch of government. And that is why the sheriff is as powerful as he is, or she is, in our counties and local communities. Because he is the only elected official of the people themselves. And that came from before time.
Well, that's what makes the sheriff so powerful, is because the people can recall him. The grand jury can indict him. He is held to account in very many ways. And of course, he has the power to kick out federal agents whenever he feels like it. Except one of the problems is, we got a county with $100 million budget and $30 million coming from the federal government. I shouldn't buck the federal government. Whoops, we got a real problem here.
Well, speaking of a problem here, guys, it's not really a problem, but I'm having you guys go on with the great discussion you're having, but we do only have about, 11 minutes worth of, it's not even live, it's recording time for the folks to listen to, in addition with the live for the archives. So I just wanted to let you know, and I'd like to have probably the last 4 minutes of that. So yeah, I just wanted to let you guys know, if you go ahead.
I pretty much said my thing. I was just calling for precision because I'm downrange
no
under some of these rounds, and I just don't want to get hit. I mean, you know, all I'm saying.
Understood. Well, I really appreciate you calling in. It's been good to hear from you.
Sure.
It's been a while, and of course, as I said before, agree or disagree, you're more than welcome to, and of course in a lot of things, because I agree with a lot of the Constitution parties, you well know, you know, call in, you know, anytime, you're more than welcome to do so. We cover, you know, as you know, a plethora of topics, and so if you didn't hear it earlier, and this is for the audience, is that you could go to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, and on the page of the Get Involved, you could see some links that you heard about tonight to get more information. Also, and this is to the guests here as well, is that I'd like to have some folks, if they would, go and check out the button that says Save an Elephant on there, and check out the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, and just consider sponsoring one of those baby elephants as a Christmas gift for a loved one. And I think it would be a wonderful gift, especially for a child. You know, I plan on doing that for my daughter, so I think it'd be a great gift. So go ahead and please check it out. And go ahead, gentlemen. Go. I know, Floyd, you said you said your piece, so to speak. So go ahead, Kelly, and then I'll finish things off.
Well, Floyd, I really appreciate your point of precision. And, you know, we're living in an imperfect world, but accountability seems to be a little bit higher if people get into the precision. And actually, in my book, I talk some specific precision. There's an appendix, you know, don't let Forrest Gump run your grand jury, and don't let the DA run your grand jury either. And the theme is precision. Be very careful, because you're dealing with another person's life when you're on a grand jury. So precision. Precision, engineer, yeah, it just kind of flows out of me naturally, and you have some excellent points. At the same time, I'm in conflict with simplicity to win the numbers we need to bring about our political change. It's so desperately needed. So, you know, your point is brilliantly taken. Gosh, I'm glad we're friends on Facebook. I guess we're already friends, but I just want to encourage this conversation, and I hopefully await further communications.
Busy, though.
Oh, yeah. Understood. But we'll definitely I'll get together again, hopefully both on Bard's Logic Political Talk and off of Bard's Logic Political Talk on the phone and things of that nature at Facebook. And so I guess if everyone has said everything they'd like, I would like to end, like I do every night, and say thank you, of course, once again, for all the people who have called in. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Floyd, and to the others who've called in tonight as well. So thanks, of course, to the audience for listening. Hope to see you again. Take care and have a good night. And I hope you enjoyed the show and the archives. And I will do the ending song, as I do every night, by Aubrey Ashburn. And you can listen to more from music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. And that is AubreyAshburn.com. Thank you again, folks. Have a good night and take care. Thank you.